Hi, everyone. This is Glenn Keane, and you are listening to the Animation Addict podcast with the Rotoscopers. They are awesome.
The shot from the mountain tops.
A star is born.
It's a time for pulling out the stops.
A star is born.
Here from the highlight can through.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers. We've got Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I am your host, Mason Smith, and I'm here with my lovely co-hosts, Morgan Stradling and Chelsea Robson, here at the very tail end of the year 2014.
The best of 2014!
We need to have a musical episode. We have someone write the music, and we just make it an opera.
Gemma Clark should do that.
Terrible.
Guys, we made it another year. Can you believe it?
84 episodes, folks.
84
hey, that
episodes.
That means 2015 is going to see our 100th episode.
Oh my gosh, oh my gosh. That's exciting. That is
really exciting.
I don't know if I...
We got to start
I kind of assumed we'd always come to this point, but I guess I never
Can you believe it? I mean, we've done tons of YouTube videos and like we've done a few interview podcasts and everything like that, but like our real 100th... Animation Addicts podcast, you know, the media that started it all. The big one. Extremely dangerous.
So yeah. This last week, in preparation for the Best Of episode, I decided to go back in and listen to our past Best Of episodes. And can I just say, any of you guys who were fans from like 2012, hearts to you. Cause
y'all are hardcore.
Like, no, I was listening to that Best Of episode. I'm just like, man, we've come a long way.
That is a great way to put it, Chelsea.
I know. We've come a long way. And I'm really glad that you guys stuck through it with us, man. Thank you.
I'm going to put that episode in the show notes so you can all have a laugh, too.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder who our oldest listener is, you know, like besides my mom and my sisters.
That would be awesome to hear, to have that person come out of the woodwork, because we started in February 2012. And I remember going back and looking at the stats, like at the time, and we got in our first week like 77 downloads, which is impressive. Like that's impressive. And I remember I worked so hard and I did the thing you're not supposed to do where you spam everyone on Twitter that has anything related to Disney or animation. Like, hey, we have a new show. Can you retweet? Hey,
what
we have a new show. Can you retweet?
That.
It's annoying when you do it to like 40 people in a row and they know what you're doing. Yeah, I did that.
How come it's not annoying when Jay-Z does that, but it's annoying when we do that? I don't get that. I think you did all right.
Well, so yeah, so those people who, I don't know how they found us back in February 2012. The only way could have been maybe through Twitter and those retweets, but send us a voicemail. Let us know that we got it. We got to figure out who these people are because they're awesome.
Yes.
What
they
if
are.
It's John Lasseter?
He's coming out of the woodwork.
It's happened before.
In the distance, hear the laughter of the last unicorn.
All right, so let's move into the results for the 2014 Rotoscopers Awards. First off, I want to give a big thank you to Max, one of our writers. He wrote up the post for this and created the little logo that we do every year that's very reminiscent of the, you know, the Annie Awards logo. And then he put together the categories, and some of the other writers, they all came together to come up with the nominees for each of the categories. So here we go. We're just going to jump right into it. This year we had 293 responses. Last year we had over 1,000, and I think that's my fault because I made the link a little bit more prominent on the website last year. This year I forgot to add it to the sidebar. Hashtag Christmas, you know, it gets messy. But thank you to the 293 people who did complete the survey. And without further ado, let's go into the results.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
All right, the first category, best animated film of 2014. So what do you guys think was the best animated film of 2014?
All right, I would think it's either Lego Movie or How to Train Your Dragon 2 or Big Hero 6. But I really want How to Train Your Dragon 2 to win.
All right, so I will give you the top three, starting with number three. Number three is The Lego Movie with 16% of the votes.
All right.
So you're right on that because you wanted one of these three. Next is How to Train Your Dragon 2 with 24% of the votes, which obviously leads Big Hero 6 with 45% of the votes for the best animated film of 2014.
All right, that's pretty fair.
I think that is fair.
What did the nut job get? Nobody voted for the nut job?
Nobody voted. Thank you.
Someone voted for... No. Someone voted for Legend of Oz, Dorothy's Return, but nobody voted for the nut job?
You know, I'm really proud of our readers. It shows that we really do, you know, take this seriously, except for
that's
Oz
okay.
Person.
Nobody voted for Planes, Fire, and Rescue or My Little Pony. Thank you.
See? Notably, our audience does really love Disney films. You know, who doesn't? So I'm not really surprised with Big Hero 6 winning.
I'm surprised so few people voted for Mr. Peabody and Sherman. They only got 5 votes.
Oh, yeah. That
movie was kind of just forgotten about, unfortunately.
Well, it had so many tough competitors.
Yeah.
Including itself. It was like 2 DreamWorks films in a year, and it's like, okay.
I think that movie struggled to find its audience, and I think that kind of shows in the results. Like, there was so much hype for it, but it just kind of didn't pan out, unfortunately, and didn't catch on.
Poor Sherman.
All right, category number 2, best animated short of 2014.
Oh, I didn't even keep up with those.
Yeah, we had about 5 different categories or, you know, shorts that were available. Party Central, The Raven, Duet.
Yeah.
The Dam Keeper and Feast. So top 3. Number 3 was Party Central with 7% of the votes.
Oh,
number
good.
2 was Glenn Keane's Duet with 33% of the votes. And obviously, what do you think number 1 is with 55% of the votes?
The Dam Keeper.
Toy Story of Terror.
Feast.
Oh. Hey, where does Toy Story of Terror
That falls later into Best Animated TV Show / TV Special.
Ah, okay.
So we'll see that later.
All right, so,
and
you know,
Toy Story of Terror didn't come out in 2014.
Oh, that's true. It didn't, did it? Wait, it didn't come out in 2014?
No, it came out 2013. Toy Story That Time Forgot came out this year. The Christmas special. Which,
where have you been?
I don't know where I've been for a whole year.
Been cruising the world.
That's creepy. All right. Well, all right. Okay. Feast was good.
Winston's
adorable.
Yeah,
it was. He was. He was really, really cute.
Okay. So category 3, best animated TV show / TV special. Now, for this category, there was a bit bigger of a spread. You know, it wasn't so lopsided in the results. We had Legend of Korra, Toy Story That Time Forgot, Star Wars Rebels, Gravity Falls, Adventure Time, Over the Garden Wall, and Dragons Defenders of Berk. So,
you know, we had a lot of people ask for Other.
And yes, with 5% of the votes was other. There was quite a few. I think someone stacked the votes here. We have about 4 votes for VeggieTales in the House, and it's spelled exactly the same, same punctuation, and they even have in parentheses Big Idea/DreamWorks, which makes me feel that the same person voted 4 times.
Yeah.
But unfortunately wasn't enough to garner enough votes.
Sorry, VeggieTales.
Sorry, VeggieTales aficionado. But some of those...
Someone voted Sailor Moon Crystal.
It's not the best show. It's a nostalgic remake, but good for them.
Yeah. All right, so...
Of course there's a brony who voted in there. Jeez.
What are the results?
So number 3 with 18% of the votes was Gravity Falls. A show which has been highly regarded and I haven't seen yet, so I'm going to take this upon myself.
It's Disney's answer to Adventure Time. That's the best I can describe it.
Someone's
going to hate on me for that, but it's...
The Legend of Korra was second place with 19% of the votes.
Ooh!
And Legend of Korra in 2014 had both season or book 3 and book 4, which was the end of the series. So, you know, sort of remember Lord of the Rings, how the Return of the King sort of swept the Oscars and got all the votes. I was kind of thinking Korra would do that because it was the culmination of the series, but nope. There was another TV special which took it with 26% of the votes, and that was Toy Story that Time Forgot.
There you go.
Which, if I were voting, which I did not vote... I would have voted Legend of Korra over Toy Story that Time Forgot. I wasn't a huge fan of Toy Story that Time Forgot. It was good, but I didn't like that it was positioned as a Christmas sort of holiday special. And it really had nothing to do with it. There was maybe one character that, you know, bookended the front and back, but it wasn't at all. It was an interesting story. I will give it that. But anyways, everyone else liked it, so that's why it won. All right, number 4. Best voice acting male in an animated feature. So we had quite a few for this, and I'm just going to jump right into it. With 17% of the votes, Jay Baruchel? Baruchel? JB. How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Just call him JB.
Good restaurant. Second place with 30... No. Ooh. Second place with 27% of the votes.
Right, right.
Scott Adsit as Baymax in Big Hero 6. And
that was probably the most surprising one of this year.
Yes. Yes. And I'm really happy with the number one contender, 30% of the votes, Chris Pratt in the Lego Movie.
Upset. Ooh, the thunder. The thunder, too.
I really haven't used this.
I think this is an opportunity where people kind of just saw the better voice actor and they saw past their love for Disney and they voted for the best person, which was Chris Pratt.
Aw. Honorable mentions and the others were TJ Miller for Big Hero 6. I thought that he was really good.
Yeah. The problem with this is you could totally just, you know, stack it with, you know, everything that you could. So next one is... Obviously, best voice acting female in an animated film. And I'm just going to jump right into it, guys. With 15% of the votes, at number 3, Jamie Chung, Big Hero 6, who played Gogo Tamago.
Gogo!
Second place, also from Big Hero 6, was Genesis Rodriguez, who played Honey Lemon. And with a whopping 36% of the vote... Kate Blanchett, who played Valka in How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Whoa.
Yeah, check that out.
That is an upset right there.
I voted for her. I liked her.
We're moving on to the 6th category, Best Animated Sidekick. I'm not even going to waste your time because we all know who that is with 70% of the votes, Baymax from Big Hero 6. Toothless did come in second place, though.
Yay, Toothless.
And then it's not even worth mentioning a third place for that one because everything else was just so heavily Baymax or Toothless.
So on a similar vein, the next question is best animated character.
Ooh.
A little bit more of, let's be real, our audience loves Big Hero 6 and they love How to Train Your Dragon 2. So the number one and number two spot was between Hiccup and Hero. One had 29% of the votes and one had 45% of the votes. Who do you think won?
I would choose Hiccup just because I'm more of a Dragons fan, but I don't know.
I think I voted for Hiccup too.
Well, you were in the minority because it was Hiro.
Hiro.
Oh.
Although honorable mention, something that's come up quite a bit in the other category was Emmett from the Lego Movie. So obviously that was one that maybe we should have put in.
Yeah.
As just a best animated character in general. You know, it's so hard when you're compiling these lists because you think you have everyone and you double check and they're like, yeah, it's good. And then you move on and then, you know, voting starts and then you're like, oh, whoops. So I think if maybe he would have been there, we would have seen a little more spread between those two, but I still think Hiro would have won.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, very similar to kind of the best animated character, best sidekick, we have breakout character. Who do you think it was? We have Baymax.
It's hard, to describe who's a breakout character.
It's up to you to decide. I mean, just the character that's, when you think of animation in 2014, what character do you think of?
Baymax.
Yeah, that's right. Because with 55% of the votes, Baymax got it, followed by Batman from the Lego Movie and Fred.
Oh, Batman!
And then the, you know, the Lego Movie aficionado who stuffed the ballot also had about 8 votes for Unikitty in the other option.
Mason,
wow,
it was
someone
you,
was a
it?
Huge fan of it was not. I did not take this this poll.
All right, we're moving on to best villain, and we left out real names of the villains to avoid spoilers, just in case hadn't seen the movie. I mean, at this point, I don't know if we really should have kept that. We did that because Frozen's villain was just such a you know, gasp moment. I don't think there were really many of those. Maybe Big Hiro 6, but for that reason, we left it just very generic. And the top 3 were from the Lego Movie, How to Train Your Dragon 2, and Big Hiro 6. So out of those 3, who do you think was the best villain of 2014?
Well, like we discussed in Big Hiro 6, I really don't think the villain of that movie was really good. So I hope it wasn't him.
You're right.
I mean,
it wasn't.
Could be him or her. I mean, who, you know.
Big Hiro 6's villain was 25% of the votes, second place, unfortunately. Or fortunately for those who voted, but number 1, the Lego Movie's villain with 41% of the votes took it away. President Business, which I think is definitely deserved. He was a great villain. He was so over the top and just histrionic. I loved it.
Yeah, I agree.
Chelsea, this is up your alley. Next one is best song. And here we actually had a ton of songs, but then also a lot of songs in the comments or the other category. So the contenders were for the Dancing and the Dreaming from How to Train Your Dragon 2, Immortals from Big Hiro 6, Where No One Goes, also from How to Train Your Dragon 2, Celebrate from Penguins of Madagascar, and Everything is Awesome with 3 exclamation points. From the Lego Movie. Who do you guys think took the top?
Definitely Everything is Awesome from the Lego Movie.
Everything is awesome.
That song definitely is awesome.
I mean, that's the like iconic song from this year, like in animation.
43% of the votes took the best song. Yeah. Chelsea, you're the song expert. How do you feel about that?
I actually voted for that one too.
Excellent. Also, are you recording this?
Yeah.
Oh, phew. Okay. Phew. Next up, best score.
Ooh.
So there's quite a good scores, but this really, it was down to 2, really lopsided. The winner had 48%, the second place had 42%, everything else was in, you know, 4 and under percent. How to Train Your Dragon score by John Powell and Big Hiro 6 by Henry Jackman. So who do you think took the best score this year?
Between those two, I'm going to say How to Train Your Dragon.
Me too, because I didn't really find Big Hiro 6's score very memorable.
It really wasn't. Like, it was cool and it made sense with the film, but as one that I was like, yeah, I can dig this. It just wasn't
diggable. The score for How to Train Your Dragon 2, undiggable.
We dug.
And you're right, it's How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Yay!
All right!
Though I am really sad that, like, Penguins of Madagascar actually didn't get higher up. Because that one was
the guy
cool.
that voted. Sorry. That one was cool. Who was the guy who voted for Interstellar? It's not animation.
It had animated scenes.
I guess so.
Good times. Good times with the other section.
I can't listen to the soundtrack for Interstellar without that one, like, one song getting stuck in my head. Anyway.
All right.
Hey, there's not a whole lot of Book of Life in here.
No, you know, unfortunately, I don't think Book of Life found its audience or its cult following to really garner many votes.
Which Although, is really sad because it didn't even make the song best song category, but it had the most songs of any of the animated films.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan.
All right,
everything
up next,
is loco.
Up next is the category of best quote or line. So Mason, since you're such a quoter, I would like you to go through the nominees. We had quite a few. Do your best.
All right, here we go. Mr. Peabody and Sherman. This is from Sherman. I'm a dog too. You know, everybody's like, I'm a dog. I'm Spartacus. Let's see. Oh, here we go. The la 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 la. You know that Baymax does when he fails the fist pump.
Yep.
Let's see. Oh, Stoic the Vast. You're as beautiful as the day I lost you.
Aww. It's not a Rotoscopers Animation Addicts episode without Mason doing.
Unless I talk like Stoic the Vast. All right, here we go. I forget who says this one. The oi again with the plagues. Why'd I ever move to Egypt? Metalbeard from Lego Movie. I'm going to try to channel my inner Nick Offerman. Be disabling of yon shield. And then Book of Life, Maria Posada. I belong to no one. I can't do a girl's voice.
There's a quote. Book of Life. Made it.
Yep. Yay, Book of Life. Let's see. Benny from the Lego Movie. Spaceship! Spaceship! And then Lego Movie. Darkness! No parents! Continue darkness! Will Arnett just killed it as Batman in that movie.
Yes, he did.
Let's see. The Box Trolls, which I regrettably have not seen yet. So I don't know how to quote that one.
Where are the rivers of blood and the mountains of bones? I was promised rivers of blood. That was my horrible Elle Fanning voice.
That's really morbid. Now I gotta see it. That's Laika for you, you know? Mm-hmm. Let's see. Oh, six intrepid friends led by Fred, harnessing the power of the sun with an ancient amulet they found in the attic. I don't think I did it justice because I can't really remember very well after only watching it once, but aw, Fred's quote was great. Most of Fred's stuff was good. And honorable mentions were, are you satisfied with your care?
Aww.
And then, and all this is true because it rhymes. Lego Movie, that's a pretty good one.
And Harry.
Baby.
Healthcare. All right. Let's cut to the chase. Third place, it was Darkness, No Parents, with 9% of the votes. With 14% of the votes in second place is Stoic the Vast, You're as Beautiful as the Day I Lost You. And, of course, no one is surprised with number one, Balalala. All right, we are down to the final three categories. Now, this is Best Marketing Campaign. And I'm just going to cut to the chase here. It was Big Hero 6 with 45% of the votes, although the Lego Movie did come in second with 32%. So people were impressed with the Lego Movie, but can't beat Disney. They have all the muscle behind them. And second last, we have Best Animated Movie Trailer. And there was quite a few votes, but, you know, it's the big three this year, which was How to Train Your Dragon 2, the Lego Movie, and Big Hero 6. There was a tie for second place with the Lego Movie and How to Train Your Dragon 2. But of course, with 42% of the votes, Big Hero 6 swept and took it. So we are the last category of the Movie Awards, which is the most anticipated movie of 2015. So already I'm looking at the results and it is skewed 63%. The winner
is Strange Magic.
Ooh, I know. That was a... they just shoved it last minute. They said, hey, we have this movie. It's coming out next month. And people love it. It's the number one most anticipated movie of next year. Congratulations.
Yay. Strange Magic.
And if you can't detect sarcasm, that will be gripping with it. It is actually Inside Out by Pixar Animation Studios. No surprise there. Although a second place is the Peanuts movie, which is really exciting for that movie because there was a lot of, before the test animation came out or any of the animation and the trailer, people were really nervous. But that shows that, you know, there's a lot of hype going into that movie, which is exciting. All right. Now there's two special categories. And basically, it's about us.
Yay!
Yay!
Best Animation Addicts podcast episode. So, guys, are you ready for this?
Yes.
Someone voted,
first off,
I don't
I'm watch. Really sad. I put episode 64, The Lord of the Rings, so many mini skirts in there because I just thought that was a hilarious episode. We got a
that
ton
one
of
was
feedback.
Great.
A lot of feedback. People said they loved it even though they'd never seen it. And I agree. I think this just shows no one actually listened to that episode because
I think people just voted based on the movie that they liked the most that we were doing our episode on rather than the actual episode. It's all about us, people. Focus on us.
It's true. Because I definitely would, you know, Tarzan episode was one of the most popular episodes and our newly formed episode, the Glenn Keane interview was also one of our most popular already. We've gotten a ton of feedback, but no one voted those. People voted for episode 80, Big Hero 6. Don't even compare it to Frozen.
Don't even compare it to Frozen.
Oh, yeah, but some honorable mentions. One person voted, I don't watch, and another person voted none. Boo.
Boo.
Boo, sir or madam.
Should be listen. I don't listen. But that's cool.
I don't watch.
Although, you know, our Quest for Camelot episode got 5% of the votes. Our Land Before Time also got 5%. You know, there were some good ones in there. People liked
our was when we were doing our Dinos series, and they just all happened to be movies that were very polarizing for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of us really liked any of the Dinos and Dragons movies.
Except for Land Before Time, amazing.
Well, Land Before Time, okay.
We're Back's pretty cool too. So, also,
we didn't do Best Screenplay.
No, we didn't do that this year.
No, but it was on there.
No, it wasn't.
It got voted. I voted.
Best Screenplay. Let's go back to the movies. Obviously, it was actually nearly a 30-30-30% split between How to Train Your Dragon, Lego Movie, and Big Hero 6. But just inching it out with 31% of the vote was Big Hero 6 for best screenplay.
That was really close, yeah.
And there was some Book of Life votes. Good.
Okay, guys, are you ready for the last category? This one I love because it's best opinion piece on rotoscopers.com. And so this is a way to spotlight, you know, all the talent that writes for the website and some of the best articles. Because we get, you know, we do news stories. That's kind of one of the main things we focus on. You know, we do news, we do reviews, but we also give the writers the opportunity to just express their own opinions in these opinion articles. So, you know, we don't tell them to do them. They just write them whenever they feel like it. And they're eligible for a Rotoscopers Award. So this year we had some really, really good ones. We had Is Pixar Sick by Pablo Ruiz, who is our designated Pixar writer. And he sort of talked about if, you know, Pixar is kind of going through a sickness, meaning they haven't died or anything or they haven't gone away, but they're just kind of going through this lull period. And that was the focus of that. Next one is Tangled versus Frozen. Which is the better movie by Gary Wright? That's a big topic.
Oh my gosh.
Saying, oh,
that
I like Tangled
one.
Better. I like Frozen better.
Over 300 comments on that sucker.
300 congrats. Comments. Yeah. Amazing article. Next up, why hasn't How to Train Your Dragon 2 taken off? That's by Steven. And I love that article because we were really expecting, you know, the first How to Train Your Dragon movie was just so successful. And everyone was expecting the second one to be even bigger of a success and just this like box office blowout. And it didn't really happen in the US. And it was kind of a slow burn to, you know, it was still very successful in the amount of money it made. But during those first, you know, 4 weeks, it just didn't take off very much. And so this was an introspective article talking about, you know, why is that? And I really liked that one. Alex Parker, she wrote, Your Guide to Last Minute Animation Halloween Movie Cramming. Super cool article. It was like, okay, Halloween's here. I want to watch all the cool animation Halloween movies. And it's all right there. And then the last two, One by Blake Taylor called Frozen, 1 year later. That was a retrospective of, you know, the history of Frozen. A year after it's been released, here's the impact that it's made on the world, basically. And then lastly, by one of our newer writers, Brandon, it's Back at the Top, How Pixar Can Win Back the Feature Animation Crown. You know, I'm happy to see that there was quite a mixture of votes here. There wasn't one that necessarily took over. But, you know, I think we already gave this away by mentioning the number of comments a particular article had had. But Gary's article, it has 343 comments, which is interesting because it has 34% of the votes. 3 and 4 is its favorite number right now. So definitely that was the winner this year. Other ones were Frozen 1 year later. Notice anytime Frozen can reel its ugly head back in here, people love it.
Do you remember last year Myra's article about how she wasn't excited for Frozen and that one just blew up?
Over 100 comments. I think that was like the comments.
That was just people defending it because they were mad that someone didn't like it.
No. I mean, hey.
Still, it got the
comments are comments.
And she did win last year.
All right. So that is all we got this year for the Rotoscopers Awards. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I love doing it every year. It's a fun way for us. You know, this is our best of 2014 episode. So obviously we should include the results for the best of 2014 in animation. This is just our thoughts. So let us know in the comments of this episode, rotoscopers.com/84, if you agree with some of these results. If you don't, I'm going to include the show notes. I'm going to include the winners. So that way you guys can, you know, you don't have to write this down or remember everything we just said. It'll be there in the comments. So definitely check that out. And thanks everybody for voting and everyone who participated. This is just such a fun time.
All right, guys. This is going to be a really exciting episode. I mean, every year, it's one of my favorite things. I'll go through, and as I'm editing each episode, I'll kind of like take a couple of my favorite snippets of like, haha, that made me laugh. And so there's a couple in this. I did set aside a couple moments that were never posted. I mean, they were never included in any of the Rotoscopers Animation Addicts podcasts.
Ooh.
So those are fun. Those are just some more behind the scenes, like getting to know a little bit more about Morgan, Mason, and I, and, you know, just kind of like who we are. As you know, like
the real side of us all.
So that'll be fun. Then we also have a couple really fun bloopers, like some of my favorite bloopers that were put in there. And then a couple of you fantastic fans sent in emails as far as what your guys' favorite quotes were from the past year. So as we go through this, you'll be hearing I'll be featuring a little bit of the music from each of the movies so you can know which movies each one is coming from. If you go to therotoscopers.com/84, you're going to be able to put all of your comments in there. Make sure to let me know, like, what were your favorite quotes of the whole thing? And in between, we're also going to be throwing in your guys' mailbag. I do want to give special thanks to Esther for sending an email as far as what her favorite clips were. So those are also going to be in this episode, as well as from Frank and Gemma. So we are so excited. Let's jump on in.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Okay, so we are moving into our big old mailbag. I lugged it in from the other room. And, you know, in our other episodes, when we read an email and someone's referring to, like, hey, I'm sending my review for X, and it's a movie we did 4 months ago. You know, it's hard to keep up on the mailbag. We try. We do 4 or 5 to 6 emails every episode, but we still get so behind. So, like I mentioned at the beginning, this is an opportunity for us to just catch up on the mailbag. You know, a lot of these are referring to movies we reviewed in 2014. It's relevant, so we can talk about it. So get ready, hold on to your horseshoes, because it's going to be great. Also, this may be one of the last times we do the mailbag segment, just because we're going to be moving more towards a live show, which is actually like something we haven't talked about for you guys, but we want to do the show live and say, like, every Monday at 7, you know, join in and you can watch us on a Google Hangout. We'll talk about the show, and, you know, then it can be more interactive. Like, you can, you know, send us your thoughts in the chat, and it could just be a really cool interaction between you guys. And that way, there's not this huge delay between when the episodes come out. Right now, we record it about 2 weeks early, and it takes us a while to edit it and get everything ready and then upload. But if we do it this new way and we streamline everything, we can release it the next day. So I think that's really exciting. But with voicemails, they kind of take a little bit of time. We love hearing your thoughts, and we love, like, hearing and reading your thoughts. But I think with the new show, the best way to do it will be with voicemails. That way we can just press a button, hear you guys say, and then comment. So we're going to be really moving toward voicemails in the new year. So definitely when we say send in voicemails. I mean, we'll still, of course, receive emails, but I most likely will just be responding to them personally, and they probably won't make it on the show, just because we've kind of reached that point where it's just like literally there's like 40 emails, which we're going to read through right now. We don't want that to happen. We want to stay up to date and not have a backlog. So that's what I have to say about it. So with that, let's get into it.
All right, here is an email from Gemma. Gemma says, hi, guys. I was going to do a voicemail saying all this, but I have no voice at the moment, so I thought I'd put it in an email. Well, fair enough. 2014 is the first year where I haven't seen every film you've talked about on each episode. Shocking. I need to do some catching up, particularly on the obscure ones that I didn't grow up with. And, of course, Big Hero 6, which is out very soon in the UK. Oh, she's from UK. I'll adjust. But from the episodes I've listened to, there's been a lot of good ones this year. Specifically, reminder of being on the bus. Those were the days. Anyway, specifically, I remember being on the bus with my headphones on, having to stop myself from laughing so much, particularly the episodes on All Dogs Go to Heaven and Tarzan. You know, I think Tarzan might be my favorite episode this year. You have good taste. Those Disney theories, man. I also really like the series you've been doing, and I hope there'll be some more in the future. And it occurred to me the other day just how far you guys have come in 2 years. You start your first episode with Beauty and the Beast, gushing over the animation and such, and now you're interviewing Glenn Keane, one of the biggest names in animation. I think that's incredible. I couldn't be happier for you guys. I want to end the email by saying thank you for using my voicemails and reading my emails out and everyone's voicemails and emails. You're able to make us fans all feel closer by doing this. Thanks again and keep up the fantastic work, Gemma. Well, Gemma, you are such a jewel. Thank you for your kind remarks. And I really liked our Tarzan episode. I think I listened to that one like twice.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's funny. It's funny. How we eventually got to interview the animator of The Beast when Beauty and the Beast was our very first episode. He practically approached us about it. It was pretty crazy how it all happened. But, man, it is pretty crazy to see how far we've come in 2 years.
It's so crazy.
It'll be 3 in February, won't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so our next email comes from Frank, and Frank says, hi, Rotoscopers. So it's been a pretty good year for animation in 2014. I was pretty disappointed with the quality of most of the animated movies from last year, with Frozen being the only standout. I thought there were 3 standouts in 2014. Big Hero 6 was another welcome addition to the Disney canon. How to Train Your Dragon 2 was a sequel built upon the original. While I still prefer the first one, the sequel came pretty close. However, my favorite was The Lego Movie. It personally was my favorite animated movie since Toy Story 3. It was hilarious, inventive, and heartfelt. The touching message about embracing creativity and imagination truly hit home with me. It also has been another fun year for listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. Some of my favorites include the recent episode on Big Hero 6. I love when you guys discuss recent movies and go heavy on spoilers. Also, Mason's impression on Police Officer makes me laugh every time. I also love the Tarzan episode. I've considered that to be one of the more overlooked movies in the Disney canon. I love that you also enjoyed Phil Collins' songs, since I know the opinions on his music is diverse. This is the movie where I agreed with you guys the most. Finally, there was the Princess Mononoke podcast. I greatly enjoyed Myra as a special guest. I like her articles on the site and how she backs up her opinions, even if they aren't the most popular, i.e. Frozen. This was also the first time I actually used the voicemail. I'm a shy guy, so it was nerve-wracking hearing my voice on the podcast. In the end, it wasn't so bad. See? It's not so bad. Send us your voicemails. So I'm glad I did it at least once. Can't wait to see what you have planned for 2015, Frank.
Attaboy, Frank. You know, the Princess Mononoke episode was really fun because we had Myra, and she's got such unique views on the world of animation that it was just a really good episode. And I got very emotional on that episode also. I really agree about the Tarzan episode. We just clicked, we were just firing on all cylinders on the episode. And the discussion just went to all these fun places, especially the Disney theories. This email is from Joshua K. Joshua says, "Hi, Rotoscopers. 2014 was a great year for animation and this podcast. Tough I've not seen all the films from 2014. I'm going to give you a one-sentence review for all of them. The Nut Job. I have not seen it yet. Don't plan to. Come on, man."
That's the best.
I'm so tempted to just stop the whole show and just go on my usual Mason Smith soapbox about The Nut Job, but I'll refrain. Next, The Lego Movie. Have seen it. A real awesome movie. The Wind Rises. Haven't seen. Most likely will. Yeah, all right. Mr. Peabody and Sherman. Have seen. It's a fun adventure. Rio 2. Haven't seen. Might rent. Legend of Oz, haven't seen, don't plan on it. There you go. How to Train Your Dragon 2, haven't seen it, planning some time to watch. Planes 2, haven't seen, might watch. Also, we didn't even want it, he says. Box Trolls, haven't seen, might plan to watch. Book of Life, haven't seen. Feeling Mixed, if I want to watch it, just go see it. Big Hero 6, have seen, with the right mix of cute action and funniness, it is truly amazing. Penguins of Madagascar, haven't seen, going to see just for fun. So I'm not trying to poke fun at you, Joshua, but I think you've only seen about 3 movies this year that were animated. But thank you for your one sentence reviews on all of them, even the ones you hadn't seen. Oh well, go out and see them, man. You'll get there. All right, he goes on. Now to talk about your podcast, from Cats Don't Dance to Mickey's Christmas Carol. You did a lot of awesome episodes. I can't decide which one is the best. A favorite moment of this year was you reading my emails, probably because it is cool that you're reading my opinions, that you laugh at certain bizarre things I wrote, including the Rotospookers, and one of the best ones, the one I did for 101 Dalmatians, where you learn from my love of Invader Zim and VeggieTales. It's an odd combination, Joshua, which I still think will be an incredible episode, but including going on about how Justin Bieber should not be Larry the Cucumber. Oh, I remember that. Anyways, another Rotoscopers 2014 moment was when I got a new calendar. I found out if you continue your biweekly releases, then sometime around this summer you will do your 100th episode. I am on the edge of my seat waiting to know what it is. The final thing I should note, I sent you my thoughts on all the Pixar movies you have not done, so if you ever do an episode on those movies, I'm already one jump ahead. Who are you, Gary? Okay, I know this is a long email, but I have questions for you. What are some of the movies you are doing in 2015 that we should look forward to? And can you do an Inside Out episode sometime in 2015? Anyways, this has been a great year, and I can't wait to see what you do in 2015 to the lovable Mason, the quirky Chelsea, and of course Morgan. Good night, everybody. Is this the same guy who wrote his email? Where it's like, the lovable Mason, the quirky Chelsea, and Morgan. Good night, everyone. I don't know why it's so funny, because Morgan's like, I consider her the biggest and most important personality in this whole thing.
And Morgan.
And her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, normally well, we need an adjective
for Morgan.
I just love it. I love it so much.
Morgan needs an adjective.
Am I really that quirky? I really?
Yes, you're quirky, but in a good way. Quirky's not bad.
I didn't think it was bad, but I don't know.
Just because right. I have an adjective that has no negative connotations whatsoever.
I know.
This is why we love Joshua K. He has the best emails.
All right, Joshua, next year, I challenge you, send voicemails.
Ooh. Morgan, stop.
Sorry, it was funny. Okay, sorry, that can go in the bloopers, but continue, Chelsea. I won't laugh. I'm muting myself.
Oh my, once again, nobody cares. A funny story, when I moved into the house that I'm living in right now, there was a family that lived here beforehand, and we walk up into the attic and just kind of look around, see what they left behind, because they're still, like, a lot of their stuff is still kind of here. And I look over on this table at the side, and there's a full-fledged carpet of a bear, like the bear carpet. And I'm like, what the heck? So we ended up putting it in the coat closet. So now anytime anybody ever opens up the coat closet, they get to say hello to Baloo. Freaks them out every time. It's awesome. I feel like none of my stories are ever funny.
I'm so sorry. I took a phone call during that because I'm recording at work, and Jared was like, where are you? I'm like, I got late, so I decided to record at the office. He's like,
what a great
sorry,
guy.
Chelsea, you can tell that story again, and I'll listen.
And we'll laugh. Sorry, I was texting.
Nobody cares!
No!
It's like, oh, Chelsea's telling a story. This is your time to
it's
clue
not that we
out.
Don't like you.
No, Chelsea, normally I never take phone calls, but you know what? It's your husband and you're missing and he's worried about you. Whatever.
Moving on. Like, sure, just you married people can just ignore us single people. Sorry, Chelsea, I was instant messaging Jana.
Okay, for real, tell us again.
No, yeah. I'm done.
This is going to be like on the best of for
yeah,
this year.
Yeah, totally.
We're so sorry, Chelsea.
Oh, it's a good thing it's raining because I'm crying inside.
No.
We love you.
You know we didn't respond just because we were talking to our spouses. I'm sorry, Chelsea. Don't cry.
Once again. Once Chelsea starts talking, it's time to clue out, whatever.
Oh, brother.
Balto, stuffed and available for viewing in Cleveland.
That was pretty funny. A bit long.
Playing Disney Scene It together. Morgan and I had this dream of playing Disney Scene It over long distances.
I really think
I could take her.
No way.
It would be a challenge.
I have Disney Scene It in Arizona.
I can go get that.
Oh, never mind. Sorry, Chelsea. Mason's way cooler.
I just got outdone once
under
again.
Under your thumb, goof.
I wrote in a while ago when I first started listening to your review of Tintin, writing at midnight again, too. Sorry in advance. All right, here we go. Ice Age. I was not old enough to be watching movies when this came out, so the first Ice Age movie I saw was the third one. I was really into dinosaurs. I liked it a lot, but the hopeless Scrat on the side falling in love with, spoilers, getting betrayed at the end. He appears a lot more in the films as well. I also really like Blue Sky, but will forever be a Disney girl. I think it did Horton Hears a Who really well, which I also really liked. Next up, Sleeping Beauty. I love this. This was my first actual Disney movie I saw, and it will forever be a classic in my mind. Aurora is not my favorite character, hashtag Belle for life, but is graceful and beautiful, which I could learn from. Thanks for everything, Catherine. All right, thanks, Catherine. Thanks for your thoughts. I liked reading what you had to say about Ice Age and, of course, Sleeping Beauty. Who doesn't love Sleeping Beauty?
Wow, I remember seeing Horton Hears a Who in theaters, and I really didn't think it was that special. Maybe I need to go back and watch it. Of course, I didn't see The Lorax either.
liking the themes you've been doing of late. It makes the podcast easier to follow, in my opinion. I was thinking of some movies that can go on one theme, and here they are. I think you'd call this the twisted storytell theme. I'm not going to give you the whole plot of these, but here's a synopsis. Here's my list for this theme. Daydreamer, which is a stop-motion live-action Rankin-Bass film, The Phantom Tollbooth, Shrek Hoodwinked Igor, and The Adventures of Mark Twain. Anyway, I just thought these movies would be great for a theme. I'm just giving you some suggestions, but I do really like these movies that I'm suggesting. I hope you'll take note of this list. I'm looking forward to your many podcasts. Eric Faulkner.
The Adventures of Mark Twain is not a kid's movie, and I don't think I would ever. No, it's not. It has some really terrifying sequences in it. Yeah, Mark Twain is pretty heavy stuff. We and still haven't twisted. Done Shrek.
That is kind of interesting why we haven't done that.
We should do a monster series.
I mean, forget Hoodwinked. Sorry, Eric, but Shrek would be such a great episode. This is one of my favorites of all time. Anyway, pretty good idea. I like twisted fairy tales.
That's spelled WHIPPET. Right?
You said PP. We're like Voltron. We like turn into this giant robot. Oh, great. It's all on me again. Apparently, freaking train. How many trains are they going to come through this town?
This alligator also reminded me of Speed from the Swan Princess. Like, there's always this character that's really fast at swimming in the water and... Okay, never mind. Just cut that all out. The juxtaposition between his diabolicalness. Thank you. Let me just say that. I think the juxtaposition. I can't talk. I'll try this one more time, guys. I love the juxtaposition between.
By the way, getting to the point where you could say juxta. Dang, I can't even say it. That's gonna be a good part of the blooper reel. Yeah, wow, I can't even say it. Juxtaposition. There we go.
Juxtaposition.
Oh well, way to go on your first try. Shut up, Chelsea.
I want you all to know that I'm better than you.
Well, you're great. You're pretty great.
Team
so
against-
there you go.
Revenge! Anyway,
I remember watching it the first time and feeling so mad at how, yet again, the married life scene started the movie off with me crying. But in spite of being angry, I knew that the story would be wonderful. I love the juxtaposition. See how I got that on the first try?
Okay.
Quiet, Chelsea.
I love the juxtaposition, twice in a row, of how Mr. Frederson with Russell...
Basically, the last 5 minutes, just cut. Just cut after I said there's a poll
just
on the website.
Throw it all away. Just.
Okay, cool. I made that way more complicated. Chelsea made that way more complicated.
Sorry.
Stupid person who can pronounce juxtaposition. Dang it.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Lauren, also known in some circles as Cody the Maverick. And I've been a listener of your podcast since 2012. An early fan, I know. The first episode I ever listened to is your Wreck-It Ralph test screening episode, before that film was not yet released at the time, and I was dying for new information on the then-upcoming movie. Today, your podcast helped me make the most out of my long college art classes. Being that I'm a longtime listener, I thought I might suggest a couple animated films you might want to talk about in the future. She mentions the Powerpuff Girls movie, the Care Bears movie, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the movie, which is a 1998 film, not the one that you're probably thinking of. Anyways, she says, keep up the great work. I'll continue listening to your podcast well into the future. Best regards, Lauren.
All right. Thank you, Lauren. Powerpuff Girls movie. I don't even remember that.
We'll get to it eventually.
Yeah. Well, you're bringing out some old school stuff. Care Bears movie, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the movie from 1998. There's another one.
Didn't we already do the stop motion one?
We did the original, but she said, like as she says, not many people know this film exists.
That's true.
Hi, Rotoscopers. Here's to Chelsea and wishing you a very happy birthday and a year of blessings ahead. Congratulations. I'm sending you, Mason, and Morgan a virtual box of my infamous cookie dough Oreos along the way to celebrate.
In your last podcast, you mentioned the overwhelming number of anime shows and films that are on the market. It's challenging to select just a handful to watch and review, and I've learned that not all of them are accessible to the general public. Morgan, hope you're enjoying Sailor Moon Crystal. What do you think about them redubbing the original 90s version again into English? But I'm glad you've been able to review some Miyazaki films since they've reached such a wide audience. A lot of people I know don't watch anime as a matter of their own personal taste, but they seem to have seen at least one Miyazaki film and enjoyed it. My cousin doesn't care for anime, but especially likes Castle in the Sky. In that note, I segue into Miyazaki's first film from 1979, Lupin the Third, The Castle of Cagliostro. All I can say is whoa, because this film is a wild ride of adventure. It doesn't have the social messages of Princess Mononoke or Spirited Away, but that's just fine. The dated animation, notwithstanding, is a fun caper into strong 1960s James Bond vibe and visual gags on par with classic Warner Brother cartoons. The story centers around Lupin's mission to rescue a lovely young noblewoman from her wicked fiancé while storming a castle full of death traps and assassins. Did I mention Interpol is on Lupin's back and there's a counterfeit ring going on? Throwing car chase scenes, battling guards, and some explosions, and you'll have one guy who's crazier than Ocean's 11. It's interesting to see that Miyazaki's signature elements in this film that developed into his later ones, for example, themes of flying, eroding civilizations, but it is pure fun, fun, fun. Hope you guys put this on your bucket list. You won't regret it. Maybe even tie it into films for a Courage and Capers series, like doing DuckTales the movie alongside it. I hope you continue to do more Disney classics along the way, especially The Jungle Book. Lately, I've been reading the original stories that nearly all Disney films were based on, including 101 Dalmatians, and Bambi. While most of the fairy tales were based off stories from the Grimm Brothers and Charles Perrault, Rudyard Kipling's original story about Mowgli the Man Cub raised to follow the jungle law is a far cry from the jammin' Disney version. I still like the Disney film for its music, but the novel's darker tones and social messages make it a compelling story and one of my favorite classic books. With the news of two new versions of Jungle Book coming to film, I wonder if they will be closer to the canon material. Thank you so much, Time, for reading and responding to your doting fans. Don't forget to sing, 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 Esther. P.S. Coffee, tea, neither, or both. Pumpkin latte for me, hands down.
Oh yeah, Lupin the Third. You know, I never got into those movies. And like old Miyazaki and old Ghibli, I haven't gotten into.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the new stuff.
I thought it was interesting what she mentioned in old Miyazaki. It's just sort of like raw. It's more of like a James Bond type film. There's
well,
a lot
Lupin
of visual gags,
yeah.
And it doesn't have like the social messages that his films kind of became, you know, common and known for.
Oh man, a Miyazaki film that's not anti-war. Just watch The Wind Rises and the old stuff. But yeah. We need to get into more Miyazaki. We need more anime. Sorry, Chelsea. We got to do more anime.
So, and then the big kicker, the PS. Coffee, tea, neither, or both. She likes pumpkin latte.
I have never had a pumpkin latte or any kind of latte or any kind of tea in the traditional sense.
I like herbal tea. Fruit
herbal
teas
tea
are
is
nice.
Good.
I like fruit teas.
I was I've drank my share of yerba mate out in Argentina.
I'm sure you have. It's called chimarrão in Brazil, and we weren't allowed to drink it.
Complicated.
I know. We weren't allowed to drink it because it would like somebody way before us had like burned their mouths or something, and so none of us
then it just ruins the fun. Just like the one kid who drowned swimming on the
love the scene where Ashitaka tries his hand at working the giant bellows in the ironworks, and all the ladies are like so thrilled to have like a useful man around. They're like, whoa, he's so cool.
See, that's a lesson to all men out there. If you just help around the house or just be a good boyfriend, you know, the girls appreciate it. It's a big deal.
What
it's
do we
smooth.
Want? A girl worth fighting for. But the ladies love a man in armor. Yeah, totally. You're totally right, Morgan. They would have totally split it up into two.
Well, except for this is Miyazaki, and he would have had the brains to say, no, we're just making it two plus hours.
That's exactly what I was gonna say.
He would have mailed like a severed hand to the distributors being like, no cuts. Anyway.
Yeah, he would not have been okay with any Americanized, you know, cuts just for the sake of making more money.
Yeah, totally. Is it me or are those little pigskin assassin dudes really creepy? They're like the elephants
really
from Dumbo. They're like the trippy hallucinogenic sequence of Dumbo.
Yeah.
We're boars. We're Boris. We're Boriskins on parade. Here we come. Clippity cloppity. They're here. They're there. What'll I do? What an unusual view.
Oh, someone please make fan art of that. That's wonderful.
It can have Ashitaka and San looking around, and the little pig dudes are dancing around them. I don't know why I find it so funny. Anywho. And so Okoto, a poor guy, is becoming consumed by the demon, and then I don't know, he tries to eat San. And so San is in, you know, she's up Poop Creek without a paddle, trapped, as it were. And so everybody's kind of clashing in this huge finale.
After covering a run of not-so-great films, it's gutsy to recommend one that is even worse. But not all films can be classic, and sometimes a bad film is so bad, it's good. The film is Food Fight, and it's not only possibly the worst films ever made, but it's possibly one of the worst films in general ever. But therein lies the charm. Like Plan 9 from Outer Space, and more recently, Birdemic, Food Fight is almost a celebration of cluelessness. The story behind the film is far more interesting than the film itself, which you can check out here, and she includes a link to the article. This film is so bad to the point of being offensive at times, which adds to the charm as if it was supposed to be for kids. But because this is not a film to cover on the podcast, I just thought it'd be worth knowing about. On a different note in the line of not-so-great films, and adding to Mason's watching films with the director's commentary, have you ever seen Brother Bear with the commentary of Rootin' Took? Trust me, it becomes a very different film. Alan Perkins.
Well, possibly the worst animated film ever made.
No, Ratatouille is the worst animated film ever made. But Food Fight just sounded so great. It's like, hey, all the food mascots that nobody knows all together in their Avengers-style movie. And we're going to release it exclusively on Redbox.
See, that would be really funny, though. Like, the idea is great.
Oh, man. I haven't seen it. Maybe I'll see it someday. Heck, who knows? I could be animating on Food Fight 2 sometime in the future.
Big step up for you.
I have not seen Brother Bear with commentary by Root and Took.
It's great. Like another movie in itself.
I'm sure. That just sounds like hilarious, eh?
Oh, bears, eh?
Dear Rotoscopers, hello from England. I'm a fairly new listener. I was directed to your site by one of the final posts of the webcomic Brawl in the Family, and I've really been enjoying the site. It's very helpful for keeping up to date on what's going on in the animation world. Thank you, everyone, for all your hard work. I've been listening to your podcast as I paint. Whilst I was listening to your spirit one, I was painting a picture of Manolo from the upcoming film The Book of Life. I can't wait! I was really excited to see that you'd already done a podcast for A Monster in Paris, because that is one of my favorite films. I remember getting really excited and being part of the general fandom buzz before its release. Then went to see it at the cinema the day it came out. Unfortunately, there was a bit of a mess up and we ended up waiting about 20 minutes or so in darkness after its starting time before several of us went on to find someone to fix the problem. But when they eventually started it, we didn't have to sit through the advertisements, so hooray! Also, I thought you might want to check out a 2D animated Danish film called Help, I'm a Fish, which is about three children called Fly. Yeah, I'm not sure why he was given that name either. Chuck and Stella, who through a rather unfortunate series of events and some rash headedness get transformed into a fish via a potion. They must find their way back to get their fins, hands on the antidote potion that'll turn them back into humans before 48 hours have passed. Otherwise, they'll be a fish forever. However, the antidote has an unfortunate effect of slowly turning regular fish into humans too, so there's this egomaniac pilot fish, voiced by Alan Rickman, who's been accidentally subjected to an anti-fish potion, who has his own plans for the antidote. From what I call, the film was released in the UK in about 2001, 2002, but it wasn't until 2005, 2006 that it got released in the US under the title A Fish Tale, with a really shoddy looking cover that makes it seem just like rip-off cash-in of Shark Tale. Also, you see someone drown on screen. Yikes. I don't know, this is probably really long and boring and I've been rambling, but I don't know, the site and podcast and writing in just makes me feel really excited. Anyway, thanks for all that you do, Izzy.
Okay, Izzy, thanks for the suggestion on Help, I'm a Fish. My favorite part is that it got a crappy, like, cover when it was released in the US, so it just looked like a total ripoff of Shark Tale. When it's not, apparently It's decent, but I'm actually interested in seeing it now, but poor marketing. It's like, why? Really, would that have made it sold more copies if it was a ripoff of Shark Tale than actually just promoting it for what it was? I mean, probably. That's the sad thing.
Dun 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 dun. Hey, it's Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, basically. This was the predecessor to another great dinosaur movie.
This is the prequel to Jurassic Park. No touching!
Yeah. But still, I mean, this was his second most... I can't talk. But some movies kind of start in, you know, What's the opposite of prosperity? Can't think right now. Adversity.
Wickedness.
No.
Thanks for bringing us back to ground level, Morgan.
Absolutely. I prevent you from. I'm like the crab I'm like the crab in the bucket. You know. I don't want. If I can't get out, no one's getting out.
If you say so.
Oh. Yeah, I heard that. So
what is that? Some kind of funky West Coast thing? I don't know. What's a crab in a bucket?
It's like a church analogy. So if you
I've never brought a live crab to a Sunday
okay this
school.
This will be a blooper. This will be a blooper. But there's an analogy that this actually happens. If you are hunting crabs and you stick them in a bucket, you don't have to put a lid or anything on it on the top, because if you have more than one crab, they will prevent each other from climbing out. So if one crab gets up there and he's almost pulling himself out, all the other crabs will pull the crab down because they're just selfish that way. And so the analogy kind of goes, you know, don't surround yourself by other crabs like that. Like, don't let others bring you down and prevent you from reaching your goals. So it's the crab in the bucket. And apparently that's me.
We were in the same class, so we totally know this.
Yes.
I've never heard that before.
Oh, now you know.
Here in Texas, we're usually just like, here, try to break all these here popsicle sticks at once. See, can't do it. What do we learn about quorums now? Okay. We've been talking longer than the movie goes on.
Shark Tooth. Not Shark Tooth. Dang it.
So honestly, right. I didn't pay attention during the climax, so y'all will have to take it from here. Don't drink the drink. It's poison. Ugh. Whenever I think of toast, I think of Emperor's New Groove.
Yay! No, you got to do it in
They should make a mashup trailer with Land Before Time and The Lord of the Rings. It is fairly very fellowshipy.
Hey, Rotoscopers. My name's Jaren. I'm from Melbourne, Australia. I've been listening to your show for about 2 years now. It's a great way to pass the time while walking home from work or while I'm covering books at work. I would like to suggest you dedicate an episode to the Australian animated gem Mary and Max. The director, Adam Elliott, previously won an Oscar for Best Animated Short. I love this film for its black comedy and the dark themes that it covers of friendship and mental illness. Looking forward to more future episodes. Hung.
Oh, Mary and Max. Hey, I saw that over the summer and I wrote a blog post about it on This Animated Life, my personal blog that, ooh, you know, is flapping around like a Magikarp on dry land.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Magikarp.
Anyway. But someday I will blossom into a proud and powerful Gyarados, or however you pronounce that Pokemon's name. Anyway, I thought that Mary and Max was pretty good. It was very depressing, and Philip Seymour Hoffman just stole the show. But I thought it was some really good stop motion. And I don't know if we would do that do Mary and Max on the podcast. Maybe write some articles on it, but I don't know if we would do an Animation Addicts on it, because it has several adult themes, but I don't know. I mean, we did All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Hi, guys. I know the Halloween Spectacular is out. I'm currently listening to it, but I had a suggestion that came to mind. I remember loving The Halloween Tree, based on the book Rape by Ray Bradbury, when I was young. No idea if it holds up, but I do remember it being pretty creepy. And hey, it talks about different world celebrations of Halloween, so it's a little educational. Haha. Anyway, love you guys. Thanks for answering my last email and convincing my sister-in-law to finally watch Cats Don't Dance. Success! Mandy.
That is a success, getting somebody to watch Cats Don't Dance. I mean, we loved that show after we finally watched it, because none of us had ever seen it, really. And then we see it and we're like, this is awesome. So, yes, success, Mandy.
Hello, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. My name is Sarah, and I've been a big fan of your podcast for about 2 weeks now. My favorite episode is probably the Land Before Time one. I absolutely love Mason's impressions, mainly Hiccup. I squee every time he does his Hiccup voice. I think it'd be really cool if you reviewed Watership Down, Thunder, House of Magic. I saw the DVD review, but I think it'd be really cool to get a full discussion. Open Season and The Lorax. Stay awesome, and I will be eagerly awaiting the next podcast. I love you guys. Sarah.
Well, thank you. I enjoy my own impressions also. And Watership Down is it's kind of a staple in the Smith family. It's like required watching. That and along with all of Mad Max, all of the Godzilla movies, and all the Terminator movies, because we're all preparing for the apocalypse. But Watership Down is such a great allegory for like social stuff that's been going on since the beginning of time. And I just think it's too bloody to recommend to people on the podcast, considering how many young people watch. But at the same time, it's a really important one for young people to watch because of its social commentary. So I don't know. Maybe someday we'll do Watership Down.
Hi, Rotoscopers. I love your videos. I have a very complicated question for you regarding the Disney Vault. I understand that this is more of a marketing program and is colloquially referred to as what the Disney company sees as their most successful animated films. It must be critically acclaimed, make a bunch of money, commercially flexible, and of course, people like it. I understand why movies like Robin Hood and Mulan are not in the vault, but two movies, Dumbo and Alice in Wonderland, which are not in the vault, okay, at least on the B-Corp Disney vault, do not make sense to me. Those movies are critically acclaimed, made a lot of money on Blu-ray and theatrically, they were commercially successful, and universally seen as animated classics. Since they are exploited in nearly every major medium in Disney's marketing, advertising, merchandising, etc., why not exploit them in the home video department? I know that a lot of movies, including Fantasia, were supposed to be on the Diamond/Platinum edition, but due to, I must assume, a schedule mix-up, it didn't happen. I contacted Disney themselves, and they replied that Disney and Alice are among the first home video release since the very beginning, so it's tradition that they are out of the vault. Quite frankly, I don't buy that. Who the F wrote that rule? Why is that a bad thing? Weren't these movies more arbitrarily picked to be among the first? I'm sure that's not a nice way of saying it. Weren't these movies more or less arbitrarily picked to be among the first? I'm sure that's not a nice way of saying it, but is there something else they're trying to tell me? I've also heard people say, Walt Disney didn't like Alice in Wonderland. Then why would Sleeping Beauty, Dalmatians, and Peter Pan be in the vault? He didn't like those either. Or Dumbo is racist. Meanwhile, Peter Pan, Lady and the Tramp, and Aladdin get the vault treatment. Or they released on TV most of their lifetimes. So what? By my memory, Alice was re-released in theaters because it was so popular on TV. I understand that this is a marketing tool, and the only real difference between the vault and non-vault release is the distribution. I do love Dumbo and really love Alice, but it is completely besides the point. I legitimately understand why some movies are not in the vault, but for these two, I can't find a good reason. From a business standpoint, it doesn't make any sense to me. Since this is Disney and they change their minds all the time, example, they said Aladdin was going to be in the Diamond edition, but look what happened to that. Even though they state the Diamond lineup is going to end in 2016, I've heard rumors that they will release Alice on a Diamond edition to cross-promote the horrible Tim Burton sequel. Similarly, how they cross-promoted Maleficent with Sleeping Beauty Blu-ray this year. And then Dumbo will follow it, starting again with Snow White and its 80th anniversary. That would be a good idea, since Disney has no intention to release older films on 3D. Financially, they would have very little to lose. My question, are they in the vault? If not, why not? While I'm on the subject, do you think that Tangled, Wreck-It Ralph, and Frozen will get in the vault? Or is there a bigger possibility that the vault will end with the likes of instant streaming canceling out the point of the vault? Thank you so much, Jackson.
So, Dumbo and Alice in Wonderland, I just don't think, like, I know they're personal favorites of yours, but I just don't think they have that, like, ooh, I gotta watch that movie, you know, popularity that makes it worthy of the vault. Like, they are classics, but to me, they're not top-tier Disney classics. They're maybe one or two steps below, and I think for that reason, that's why it's just not in the vault. It's not Beauty and the Beast or Snow White or any of those, Cinderella. They're good, but they're just not quite there, and so for that reason, they keep them out of the vault.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting point, logical points you're making about why and why not these movies may not be in the vault. I don't know. I do disagree that they aren't in the vault yet. Dumbo was a pretty important movie, and so is Alice in Wonderland. I mean, they all were. All these golden age Disney films.
I'm honestly against the vault. I loathe the Disney vault. Just give me my vault movies.
Well, if you look at the vault a certain way, it is kind of a jerk face way of controlling who sees what, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of against the whole vault thing too, but it is nice to have a special place of quote unquote honor for certain Disney films, I suppose.
Or that goes into Jackson's last point talking about instant streaming. Like, is the vault dead in the era of everything's accessible, everything you can buy, long tail distribution, meaning it's not all about the most popular things. You can find the obscure, weird, hard to find movies and purchase them online, and it's part of your collection, when back in the day that just wasn't. And that's kind of why the vault, they created this like false sense of demand and just scarcity, basically, by removing it. It created this urgency that, oh, it's back out of the vault. I got to get it. But, you know, do you think the vault will become Tangled, Wreck-It Ralph, and Frozen? Do we think we'll see those go into the vault, or are we done?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm not subscribed to Disney's, like, streaming app or whatever interface they have, so I don't think I have a very informed opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it seems counterintuitive for Disney to continue doing this, but I could totally see them putting Frozen in the vault just to be like the ultimate jerk move, basically. You know, gotta get it now. Gotta get it. It's going in the vault, you know, and so if you have it in your collection, great. If you have it on your Disney Movies Anywhere account, great. But if you don't, gonna have to wait a few years.
Sucks to be you.
Hi, I'm Abby from Utah, and I'm a big fan of your show. I wanted to ask Mason what his thoughts are for good schools for future animators. I chickened out of applying for BYU, a famously good school for animators, because I didn't feel like I was smart enough or good enough to be accepted. I'm attending Utah Valley University, and I feel like I won't be as successful as the animators in the BYU program. Any thoughts? Thanks for your time, for reading this email, and I can't wait for more of your podcasts.
Well, I'll give you a bit of advice before I answer your question. And really, you shouldn't – how do I say this? Well, I guess it kind of makes me a little sad hearing that you don't think you're smart enough or good enough to be accepted into BYU Animation. Granted, BYU Animation is a very, very good animation school, and is very hard to get into. When I applied myself, statistically, it was like trying to get into an Ivy League school. But you should always, always try. Like, if you feel your heart pulling you to BYU Animation, then, you gotta do it. You owe it to yourself to apply and to try your hardest. And, I think you'd be surprised by just how far you will go, by just trying. So I would definitely recommend applying to BYU Animation. It's, I know it sounds cheesy, but you will definitely miss all the shots you don't take. And if you fail, who cares? Life will take you to another place, just like it took me. But anyway, to answer your question, good schools for future animators. Well, top of my list would definitely be Texas A&M's Department of Visualization. That is where technology and creativity come together to create awesome things. Well, it really depends. If you're a huge fan of 2D animation, then you definitely need to check out CalArts and BYU, Ringling in Florida. And then, there are more technical schools out there, that will probably help you land a job. And that's definitely where you want to check out places like A&M and also SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design. But don't think of it as which of these programs are going to do the most for me as a future animator. Think about how am I going to make a difference at these places, while I unlock the potential that I already have. And I don't know you, Abby, but you have potential definitely, and you should never shy away or think that you're not good enough for certain places. You know, for higher education. So my only advice is to do your research, maybe look at those schools that I mentioned, but just follow where your heart takes you. And I think all of us on the podcast would agree that that's the best course of action.
Hear, hear.
Subject, reviewing the bad movies. Hey guys, just wanted to say that although I know reviewing the not-so-beloved movies can be a pain, they're some of my favorite episodes of yours. Not only is it funny when you poke holes in their plot structure and characters, it's also fascinating to hear you guys take apart what went wrong and then discussing what the storytellers should have done. As an aspiring writer myself, I love listening to discussions of stories and what went right and what went wrong. Just thought I'd send this along since I'm sure it can be pretty tiring having to rewatch and then talk about movies that you have, like, zero interest in. But I've really been appreciating it. That leads me to a question for all three of you. What's your least favorite movie you've had to review on the podcast? I'm wondering if it's The Last Unicorn for Mason. Thanks for all the work you do, guys. Todge.
Todge. That's a great name. You know, Todd, the last unicorn, oh man, Rankin Bass just bugs the heck out of me, but I don't know if it was the worst movie that my least favorite movie that I've had to review on the podcast. I'd have to look back. I'd have to get back with you on that, but I don't know if it's the worst, but Last Unicorn was definitely down there.
Lord of the Rings for me.
Oh yeah, that one was pretty horrendous. And I'm a Tolkien fan. You know, I dabble, definitely, but man, that was hard to get through.
Bakshi turned to an animating technique that we get our name from. He turned to rotoscoping.
Woo-hoo! Go rotoscoping!
Rotoscoping! That's us!
It's the coolest ever!
Actually, rotoscoping is not the best type of animation. It's actually cheap, and you guys are hacks for having a podcast that's called rotoscoping. How dare you? I'm going back to playing Minecraft. Anyway, so yeah, rotoscoping. Films. So it's really up for the viewer to decide. Personally, my initial thoughts when I saw all the rotoscoping scenes, before I kind of took a step back and looked at it in the perspective that Morgan just said, I was actually a little insulted as a viewer that there was so much just these posterized, filtered scenes of rotoscoped action. I wanted to be like, why didn't he just make a live action Lord of the Rings? You know, instead of this stuff.
No, Jared, as we were
watching. I'm surprised Jared watched it.
Yeah,
I know, right?
It's because I was watching it and he wanted to watch basketball and I said, no, I'm watching this movie and I'm going to finish watching this movie. So we kind of sat around and the basketball game ended because this movie is so long. But he,
oh,
within man. I know. Horrible life. But within the first 5 minutes, he was like, this is the worst animated film I've ever seen. And yes, you can quote me on your podcast. And I think that's how the unsophisticated viewer would view this. Like, initially, it's like you have this cowering reaction where you're like, ew, that doesn't look good. And you don't want to give it the time of day.
I'm just going to say, I am one of those people.
So we get this goofy, kooky prologue. This red foreground and then in the back, such lifelike animation.
I'm pretty sure I saw Peter Pan in there.
I'm pretty sure it's real people, okay? Can I ask a legitimate question? So, rotoscoping, like, at some points, I don't even know how you could consider this rotoscoping because it was just real people.
So, Aragorn, for example, like, he just looks like a strange old man. No, he looks like the hunter.
He looks like...
The Hunter from Snow White.
Yes. He totally
can. Can I just say that all these characters kind of look like characters from the Living Scriptures videos? You know?
They all ran in the same circles.
Probably have big noses if they're bad guys. Telling you, telltale sign.
Ralph Bakshi said, who cares how big Saruman's nose is?
I do, because that's my gauge. How evil are you? How big is your nose?
How big is that schnoz?
Any listener, if you go back and look, if you watch any of those, that's how you know if they're evil.
Kino is like, give me more wine. Good gosh, look at that schnoz. He's evil. Anyway.
I think he missed the boat as far as like making an attractive character design. Otherwise, you just don't get the girls' vote for it.
I don't think anyone gets any girls in this movie. So
there's no girls in this movie except for the one.
How refreshing.
No, there's like two. There's the one queen that she just kind of stands there.
Oh, yeah, Galadriel.
Uh-huh.
And Cosmic then... Disco Galadriel.
Was the 70s.
It was, wasn't it? Prancing Pony. There was blatant rotoscoped footage of actors, but in Rivendell, all the elves get to be fully animated. Ooh. I'm calling racism on this one. If I was a dwarf, I'd be like, a dwarf gets improperly drawn, but the elves get proper drawing treatment. So I kind of wish he had done that with this. But there are some notes to be made about Two Towers. First of all, Grima Wormtongue is even now more creepy with the addition of the creeper mustache.
Everything just gets creepier with
the mustache.
That is a really true point.
And they call him Grima Wormtongue instead of Grima Wormtongue, so he sounds like a poison-type Pokemon. Grimer, yeah. I choose you.
Well, and I...
Speaking of Pokemon, Treebird is in there, too. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Chelsea.
Speaking of Harry Potter, it's like total Wormtail type. How do you trust anybody with the word worm in their name? How? You just can't.
Yes, it's like, hi, I'd like to apply for a job as King Theoden's advisor. Oh, sure, what's your name? Grima Wormtongue. Okay. When can you come and interview? Why did they see that coming? It's totally in there. Hello, my name is Vesivius Evil Monster. I'm here to be the new nanny. Baron Vadguy, at your service. I'd like to be your butler. These are names that you should not trust.
It's Vadguy, it's French. It's a Muppets reference.
Hey, Rotoscopers, I'm a new listener who happened to stumble upon your podcast recently, and I loved it instantly. 1 week in, and I've already gone through most of the episodes, mostly at work, and I can gladly call myself a fellow Rotoscoper. It's always great to hear you guys talk and discuss about the wonderful world of animation, especially due to our shared taste in movies, perhaps a testament of our generation and upbringing during the 90s. Some of my favorite Disney movies are the masterpieces, The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and The Lion King. I'm a guy who likes the traditional animation a bit more than computer animation. Although I can enjoy all forms of animation, I consider 2D animation to be more of an art form, and hoping for a return of the form in the future, because like anything else, it all goes in cycles. It's just sad to see that 3D is the only standard these days. How great would it be if Disney did a new traditional animation with some of the old crew returning, like Deja? How do you guys feel about today's animators? Would you like to see a return of traditional animation on the big screen? Is 3D just a phase, and can there be a way for the future for both of these forms to coexist side by side? I hope so. Perhaps 2D animation can evolve in some way to make a statement, like what Nolan does with IMAX. Also, it'd be interesting for future episodes to hear more interviews with animators creators such as Dom Hahn, John Lasseter, Glenn Keane, and Andreas Deja, the unsung heroes of animation we love. Keep up the great works, Andreas O.
Oh, well, you can knock Glenn Keane off of your list for interviews with animators. Don Hahn would be a good one. John Lasseter would be epic. And Andreas Deja, I think we should target Andreas Deja next.
Target, huh? So.
Yes, set our sights on Andreas Deja. In the dark of the night, Mason will find him.
How do you think about 2D and 3D? Can they coexist? Is 2D dead?
Well, thinking back to what Glenn Keane said when we interviewed him, he said, surprisingly, for being such a 2D veteran, he said that with the advances in the advances in technology for animation will only make 2D animation shine more. We just have to unlock the potential and find an application. So I really don't pick a side, but I think we're starting to see cool hybrid stuff like Paper Man. And then, wasn't DreamWorks doing a film called Me and My Shadow?
Yeah, it's not really in production.
Not really happening. Well, that would have been fun to see. And then Feast, maybe we'll see more stuff like that. I don't know. And then I don't know what style of animation, what's that steampunk one that's coming out that people crowdfunded?
Hullabaloo.
Yeah, I don't know if that one's going to have, a mixture.
Well, it's mostly hand-drawn, but then they're also using little bits of computer animation in there to, like, pull things together.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like when Disney used caps and everything, like, that was just kind of the application to help speed along the process.
Yeah. All right. This next one is from Catherine, and she has an awesome Disney theory, one that I could actually get behind.
Hey, here's a theory for you. You know about the book Belle was talking about in Beauty and the Beast? I think it relates back to Aladdin. Far out places, where Aladdin was set. Daring sword fights, 3 sword fights in that movie. A prince in disguise, Aladdin. Also, here's where she meets Prince Charming. Jasmine meets Aladdin. But she won't discover that it's him till chapter 3. Jasmine works out who Aladdin is. That is as far as my discovery goes, but feel free to think more about this. It might change the way you see the Disney universe. Thanks. Love, Catherine.
The only thing I don't really agree with this is a prince in disguise. Aladdin wasn't a prince. He was a
beggar in disguise.
Peasant disguised as a prince.
You know what I mean? But it does, it does kind of fit the bill, except the, when you, they actually show the picture from the book, it's definitely not an Agrabah. It's just a, you know, European fairy tale.
If you like it all that much, then have it. Sir.
It's yours. But sir, I insist. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, we never get to hear Morgan's Bell impression, and it's always spot on. This one is from our friend Niran John Kali. Yes. Whoa. Kalyana Sundaram. Did I get it right? Kalyana Sundaram. Niran John Kalyana Sundaram. Oh, man. Hold on. I will get this right. Niran John Kalyana Sundaram. Go to your room. If I say it like that, but you're in trouble.
Hey, Rotoscopers, this is Niranjan, writing to you from India. I came across your podcast on your website when researching about Thief and the Cobbler, and I've been hooked. I love your podcast music, especially since it has a little bit from Sleeping Beauty. I should have sent this in for the Sleeping Beauty episode, but I guess I slipped it off. I'd like to share an incident that happened a few years ago. Being an animation undergrad, I'm a huge Sleeping Beauty fan, and it's my favorite Disney classic. But that wasn't always the case. As a kid, I've only seen the film once or twice and have no memory watching it at all. My mom says I didn't like it. Ew, it's a princess film. Anyways, I was watching Tom and Jerry one day about 2 or 3 years ago, and it was an episode where Jerry and Nibbles flood the kitchen, freeze the water, and start ice skating. When Jerry skates, they play this beautiful music in the background, but of course they only played 2 bars of it. Even after they stop, I can hear the next 2 bars in my mind. I haven't heard this music before. Suddenly, my mind starts shouting Sleeping Beauty, and so I Google it. Top results all led to Disney's classic, and I came across the phrase Once Upon a Dream. Yes, it fits! After doing some research, I came to know the music for Disney's movie being based on Tchaikovsky's ballet, as you pointed out in your podcast. Since then, I've become an avid Tchaikovsky fan, and the waltz from the ballet was my ringtone for a while. It turns out that's what they've used in that Tom and Jerry episode. You should really listen to at least one track if you haven't already. Sorry for rambling on for so long, but there's one thing about the story that bugs me. How did I recognize music from Tom and Jerry as being from Sleeping Beauty? I hadn't seen the film in over a decade, nor heard the ballet music at all. Is that a testament to Tchaikovsky? Or Disney. Anyway, love your podcast. Keep up the great work and have fun. I hope to hear more in the future. Take care, Niranjan. P.S. Don't worry if you can't pronounce my name. So I think the reason he recognized the Sleeping Beauty waltz from Tchaikovsky, it's also a testament to both Tchaikovsky and Disney. I think you, since you had seen Sleeping Beauty just a few times when you were younger, I mean, that melody is so iconic. Testament to Tchaikovsky, that you were able to recognize it years and years later, and of course attribute it to Sleeping Beauty. So I think it's kind of both. I think Disney did a great job recognizing a very, very strong piece of music, and then obviously Tchaikovsky did a great job composing one. Hey, Rotoscopers. It's too bad that you won't be doing The Rescuers and Once Upon a Forest for the Rats and Mice series, especially since Once Upon a Forest, the last time I checked, was the third highest votes. Maybe the next time when you review animated environmental films. That way you guys could review Ferngully, The Last Rainforest, Happy Feet, The Lorax, WALL-E, Castle in the Sky, Yogi's Ark, Lark, and she goes on and on and on and on. At least we get to hear your thoughts on Mickey's Christmas Carol, an awesome adaptation of Charles Dickens' classic. Well, it's that time again for birthday questions with Morgan. I think she said her birthday was December 16th, 20th. Anyway, anyone can answer these questions, though. Hope you have a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and Happy New Year, Sarah.
All right. Morgan's birthday questions. So, are we going to do another tag video similar to the Disney tag, but with different animation studios? So basically creating our own tag? We will be the taggers, not the tag.
Well, Pixar tag would be really easy to do. People would catch on to that.
All right. Will there be more character profiles with Disney heroes or heroines and non-Disney characters? So we did the villain vignettes this year. That was our kind of...
That was very successful.
Yes. I think doing one every day kind of became overwhelming for 31 days. I liked how we did the princess profiles where it was once a week. So it like gave you enough time to digest and get excited for the next one. With villain vignettes, there were so many good articles, but it was like, another one? We're still doing this? That was my personal opinion. And I felt, as a result, some really great articles didn't get as much attention as they would have. We just need to do one about Disney horses. Like, we just need to pick a month somewhere in 2015, make it Disney Horse Month, and then just do it. Like, and then we can do our videos, which we've been talking about. And
For the last 3 years.
yeah. Just don't mention it. So are we going to have any other Rotoscopers merchandise besides t-shirts and stickers? Well,
Well, no. We got the Mason action. We got the Mason action figures rolling out.
Yeah, the Mason plush is well on its way.
That you squeeze him and he says all your favorite phrases from the Rose
Covers. All 100 voices come out of that plush.
That'd be great.
Currently, there are no plans for more merchandise. We still have quite a few T-shirts, so make sure to go to rotoscopers.com/store. I think once we sell out of the T-shirts, then we can consider other things, but kind of have a long way to go until we sell out of T-shirts. So basically, if you haven't bought your shirt, they're rock bottom prices, and it's basically our fire sale for T-shirts. They're going to be probably under $10 in 2015, signed or unsigned. So I would take advantage of that. They're going to be cheap. So please buy. That way we could do future Rotoscopers merchandise and not order as many. Just being honest here, guys. Just being honest. And lastly, are we going to review any animated TV movies that aren't holiday related on the show? No plans currently.
We kind of fly by the seat of our pants when it comes to, like, reviewing different movies. Like, you may think that we have this, like, huge plan of, like, yes, this and this and this and this. We kind of don't. We just kind of go by, yeah, let's do that one. So it can be a little bit more on the sincere. Like, yeah, we're very sincerely excited about this movie right now.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Hannah from Portland, Oregon. And my favorite moment of 2014 would have to be from the Sleeping Beauty episode. I really thought it was funny when you guys were talking about Prince Philip and how he's the best Disney prince. But I think I would actually have to agree with Mason. I mean, what about Flynn Rider? I think Flynn Rider is probably my favorite Disney prince because he's a little more relatable, a little more realistic. You know, he's not perfect, but he is kind of more like a real person. But anyway, that moment from the Sleeping Beauty episode is one that I would definitely want to hear on the Best of 2014 episode. And best of luck to you guys with the podcasts and with the website next year. Bye.
But you know what? Besides his lovely singing voice, like, when they get older, does Aurora even, like, know this guy?
No.
Because she doesn't, besides this day, she doesn't know Philip.
She doesn't talk to anybody.
I'm all concerned
she
about
she doesn't
her.
Know anybody.
All she
can
knew
carry a conversation.
She's had a conversation with the, you know, her three peasant
women.
Yeah,
three moms. It's like this weird polygamous family where there's three moms and no man. Like, gosh, Aurora, what a messed up childhood.
No, she knows they're her aunts.
Three aunts. Yeah, her aunts. Okay, I get it. Whose job was it to pass out the invitations?
Meriwether.
Anyway, she wasn't Meriwether. No, she wasn't wanted, but like their whole plan is like, I mean, at some point they're like, well, this is messed up. Deep sleep over the whole kingdom.
I know.
Maybe it was Meriwether the whole time that was just like, she was the one that hid the invitation and like they didn't, the king and queen didn't even know.
Drama.
And so that's why she has, like, to be like, you're not wanted. Hurry before anyone else says anything.
This is part of the, this is part of the real backstory.
You're
here.
Not mad at, back at fairy this school. Bad thing.
See,
back at fairy school, you know, Meriwether and Maleficent were like butting heads the whole time.
That's what happened.
Oh, the fan art. Anyway, I wish she could have just turned into a dragon, scooped up Aurora in her mouth, you know, swallow, she's done. You know? But, you know,
according to plan.
Right. It's the plan. It's such a habit of evil, dastardly villains to make a plan, you know. I'll send my evil goons after them, you know. I know, I'll turn him into a duck. Oh, yes, it's evil. They always have to have this evil plan. When if they always resort to a direct approach, you know, they're like the Japanese when they're fighting Godzilla. If they just went to their most powerful weapon right when he comes out of Tokyo Bay, they would have gotten rid of him. But no, they have to prolong the inevitable. But anyway, yeah, so Maleficent, maybe her one downfall was to trust the goons.
The goons.
Oh man. I love, okay, Prince Philip, can I just say this is my Disney crush of all Disney crushes.
What happened to Flynn Rider?
No. It's
not even Flynn Rider.
No, he doesn't have hold a candle to Prince Philip. Plus he's like a bad guy and no, this guy's class all around.
Yes, exactly. All right. And he's, okay, the best part about him, I mean, we're just jumping to the end, but it's like, yeah, he's the one that, like, did the most. He fought the most, and he was just, like, ready there. But I love him in these scenes right at the very beginning, where he just comes out as an actual person. Like, you see him as, like, an extra bucket of oats and maybe a few carrots. Well, he just goes flying off by the horse and then he falls into the lake and he's like, no, carrots, and like does the whole thing. I love it. I mean, he has personality, which is something that none of the princes had. And that's one of the reasons why when I, in my Catch and Fire, I said princes, because it's like, they need to be more like this prince. This one is the man.
Well, one of the few Disney princes that was always a prince before he became a prince.
It's true.
There's no, like, coming of age, get rid of your major character flaw thing with that, like they did with Aladdin.
It's true.
Or Flynn Rider, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's very constant.
Yeah.
And that makes him strong, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Love me some Prince Philip.
Yeah, there's talks of wood sprites.
Maybe it was a mysterious being. Wood sprite. What?
The sword. I love where she's like, oh, you're a stranger. You know, he's like, we're not strangers. We've met before. That's the only creepy part of the movie.
It's but a good then, line.
You know, through song and dance, he wins her heart. You know, it takes about 5 seconds. You know, and standard for Disney.
Oh,
and,
I'm just gonna say he would have won my heart at the same time. No, I would have been like, okay.
He uses her own line against her. Once upon a dream.
True.
It's like, snap. Ooh, snap, you're good.
You said so yourself.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, and then the owl is wearing that coat, and he's kind of like, hey, what does he have that I don't? Yeah, poor owl.
His voice like, hey, I'm sorry, it's not me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and so she's got to go away back to her three aunts, and can I have your number? Can I have it?
Can I? No.
You know, and I forget what happens.
Well, no, like my favorite is like, she's like, no, like, will I ever see you again? No, never, never. Well, maybe later tonight.
Yes, yeah, true. She doesn't take it as convincing.
She's
hooked. In the cottage by the glen.
I'm out in the menagerie. Hurry. Yeah. Timon's out off in the bushes. I can see what's happening. And they don't have a clue. Ooh, the owl, get it? Anyway.
That's a good one.
Yeah, so.
So the fairies then come in and they give him the shield of virtue and the sword of truth, which are weapons of righteousness, which I thought was kind of cute. Not cute, but I liked that terminology. I don't think in a movie nowadays they would use the term righteousness. They would say, like, weapons of being good, you know?
Right.
They wouldn't say righteous because that has sort of connotations that I guess people would be offended by. But come on, she's evil, so you need something righteous to destroy evil. It makes sense.
I know. And today's politically correct crowd, it's like nowadays you need the shield of acceptance. And we're replacing. And you don't get a sword because that's too aggressive. Take this teddy bear of avant-garde anti-institutional thinking. You know?
I agree.
Exactly.
That's what it is now.
Hey, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. Here's a question I think would be good for a nerdy couch discussion or just plain everyday discussion. Sometimes people use the word cartoon to refer to full-length animated feature films. And I know that some people, myself included, consider the term derogatory to refer to a full-length feature animated film. However, on the other hand, there are some people who don't find the term derogatory at all and feel that it's a perfectly legitimate way to describe a full-length animated feature. Just wondering what your all's take is on this. Mark.
You know, I don't really consider it to be a derogatory term because most of the time people don't really think about it. Like, they just, that's the word that comes to their mind. They don't think of it as, I mean, some people do, but I give people the benefit of the doubt and say, you just don't understand. that there is a difference and you're not part of the subculture of people that actually understand animated movies. Mm-hmm. But then again, I generally don't take offense to much of anything. So
that's a great quality that Chelsea has.
So yeah.
Just water off the back. Don't worry. They're not trying. And I think most people, when they say cartoon, I don't think they're purposely saying it to be rude. Like, oh, cartoon.
Right.
I think they just say cartoon because that's just kind of the blanket word that they use for anything that's animated. And I don't think it's supposed to be derogatory. And I personally don't take it offensively. It's just, you know, it's just a word.
Right.
So I just heard the Rockadoodle episode, and I was wondering, what's the rest of the story with Don Bluth? I know he did a couple of movies after Rockadoodle. Love you guys, Chris.
So the rest of the story of Don Bluth after Rockadoodle, after Rockadoodle, he did have a couple of movies that weren't so fantastically accepted amongst, like,
Troll in Central Park, right? Lena, Pebble and the Penguin.
Which,
but there's Anastasia.
But Anastasia was, you know, the creme de la creme. Awesome. So Don Bluth, like, he's worked on 13 animated films in his career, which, when you think about it, that is a huge feat to have gone through and done 13 films. And most of these films take at least 4 years to do. So I'm proud of Don for that. Now he's just, you know, he's retired and lives in Scottsdale, Arizona, and he helps out, you know, the neighbors, and he helps out, like, the theater group in his area, and he runs his own little theater. I mean, that's the story of Don, but he's fantastic. Yay, Don.
I've seen him come, and I've seen him go. There's one thing that I know. You gotta give all people what they want, or you'll wind up back in Kokomo, Nebraska. They like it big, they like it loud, maybe a little bit jazzy sometimes.
Do they even say what city he's in?
No, but it's supposed to be like in, it's supposed to be in like Nashville? A Nashville, or is it supposed to be in a big
Indiana?
He's making it big in Indiana.
Wait, what?
Gary, Indiana.
Wait, sorry, what are we talking
Rock-a-doodle.
About?
Rockadoodle. What's the? Is it supposed to be a fake Hollywood or a fake Nashville or a fake Vegas?
It's fake Vegas. Oh, okay. Basically. Well, it's just the city.
How did we forget Bolt during our dog series?
I don't know, because Bolt was, you mean like including it as a movie to review?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it was always in the mix, but it just got cut.
That's true.
But it just, there was a few too many Disney movies that we wanted to do, and Bolt just never quite made it to the top of the list. So one day, Bolt, one day.
We'll do like strange cat sub-characters.
Or not.
Or not.
Hey guys, new listener here. I don't remember how I found your podcast, but I saw Quest for Camelot and I was like, I gotta hear this. You see, Quest for Camelot was a special movie for me. It was the last animated film that I saw before turning into a proper teenage girl who didn't care. I saw it on VHS because I lived in the middle of nowhere. Because I was homeschooled in a forest, completely isolated from other people, no one raised an eyebrow then. In homage to this movie, I started wearing belted tunics and boots to adventure in the forest. This movie made me realize, in sort of a youthful awakening, that things like griffins couldn't actually exist, because as a race we've covered every inch of the planet. Mythical megafauna have no place left to live. That was a downer for me, because basically I was majorly into dragons and secretly hoped that somewhere they might exist. My minor obsession lasted long enough for me to spy in the end credits of this film was based on a book by Vera Chapman, The King's Damsel, the middle of a three-book trilogy. I borrowed it in the first book at the library and quickly learned that the movie was nothing like the book. Spoilers! The book is also pretty darn dark. If memory serves me correctly, our heroine is raped by her idol, paired off in a marriage she wasn't into, and then finds love in our blind hero. More of just a sexy love interest here. He opts to get his sight back and die rather than stay blind and keep loving her. And spoilers. It's not a very good set of books. I didn't even bother with the last book because I wasn't sure where the author was going or why I should stay along for the ride. I'd love to know who said, hey, let's use this obscure romance adventure novel with a depressing story as the basis for a script.
and why? Was it just lying in someone's dusty attic and they needed a few names and characters with some traits and an existing property which they could point to and say, see, we're not copying Disney. This is based on a book. At the time the movie came out, I felt it was quite obviously going to one-up Mulan. This was from a time when it seemed that whenever Disney released a movie, very soon after, a movie with a similar theme and premise would come out. Here we had two young women who wanted to be soldiers, but for very different reasons. Mulan wanted to save her father, Kaylee, because obviously she wants to be like her father, and I guess get stabbed to death like her father? Yay for half-baked character motivation! Neither movie lived up to my own expectations, but I was on the cusp of teen womanhood and I wanted a real hero, not a patsy design to sell dolls and sing songs. I wanted a coming-of-age movie about a girl, her dog, and her horse in a snowstorm, finding her destiny, casting off the shackles of familiar expectations. Instead, I got Eddie Murphy as a dragon and the hot mess that was Quest for Camelot. Like you said, it could have been great. A dead father, single mom, blind boyfriend. There are all kinds of interesting ambitions setups here. Yet, even though Garrett was the hotness, with his long flowing hair and wide sensual mouth, it took more than a pretty face to pull this movie out there for me. Thanks, Rachel Neighbors, founder of Tin Magpie.
Wow, Rachel. So, I have no interest in reading The King's Damosel books by Vera Chapman. They sound horrible. And I totally agree with you. Like, how did that get adapted and made into Quest for Camelot, which is equally just as bad and almost revolting, but, wow.
Oh my.
I guess it's been a few right? years. Maybe it's that magic 7 years, you know, like Ocarina of Time, you know.
Nice.
Hey, that's Hero with a Thousand Faces right there.
This will be another discussion, but it's going to happen.
We got to talk Zelda sometime.
Oh my gosh. Special bonus Zelda episode. It's coming at you guys. Mason Morgan special.
Thank you for leaving me out of it.
Sorry. When we do the Kingdom Hearts episode, we'll talk to you, Chelsea.
I don't even do Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
I have no input to go into any of this stuff.
You guys want to hear my current ringer?
Sure.
Okay, I will play it for you. Can you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
Zelda rap.
Dude, first there was Zelda rock, now there's Zelda rap.
Ah, Majora's Mask. Okay. Anyways, back to the one.
Okay, Morgan, real quick. Morgan, what's the name of the annoying bully pushover guy in Skyward Sword?
Groose?
Yeah. Okay, look up his theme song, but the dubstep version on YouTube. It should be like the first one with the most views. It's really good. And I haven't even played the game, but they played it in studio last semester.
You haven't played the...
Dude, hey,
shame.
Dude,
Shame.
Sorry, I haven't played any Zelda games after Oracle of Ages, which was Game Boy Color.
We are no friends.
Well, in high school, I dated a girl who had what's the one with the wolf? Twilight Princess.
Mm-hmm.
I played that a little bit, you know, hanging out with her, but I haven't really sat down and played a Zelda game in a really long time.
I see excuses. Anyways.
Hello.
Hello.
Get down, Jimmy.
Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, Jimmy. Drags me up. Crazy, crazy character.
Crazy.
Stop licking. Ugh. Hold on. All right. I need to kick him out. You guys keep talking. Bad Jimmy.
You know who she sounded like?
Who?
Stop laughing. And don't repeat everything I say.
Don't I won't repeat everything you say.
Excellent. Did you just say excellent because I said excellent? Anyway.
Jimmy, get down! So needy when I've
it's
been
not a Rotoscopers episode unless Jimmy tries to mess something up.
Yes.
He's probably just doing something adorable and mean old Morgan has to fuss at him.
One of my favorite YouTube videos is... At the very end, it's a cameo where you're like, come here, Jimmy, come look. Oh, he's so cute. And you put him down and he's like, okay, don't bother me. No, it's like, yeah.
Jimmy likes that.
He's like a Tamagotchi. He requires a specific amount of abuse and neglect and love.
Oh, I'm so messed up.
Not clean podcast.
Oh my gosh. Games are the best things ever.
I love gifts. Oh, they are a gift.
Gifts are gifts. They should change peanut butter from GIF to GIF. GIF.
Oh.
Glad I could enlighten your day.
I'm going to have that image in my head all week.
I see that around on the internet. I'm like, it makes me laugh and smile.
So these next emails are about our Ratatouille episode. That was a very popular episode that we did. And here we go.
Hey, Rotoscopers, longtime listener slash super fan. First time writing in. I started somewhere around episode 39. Of course, I've heard every episode. I've often thought about writing in before now, but I just didn't. I know this sounds kind of pathetic, but I feel like you guys are my friends. I get all the references I've heard you use on the show. Obviously, I'm a huge animation fan. I am also a large movie and TV fan. I just want to mention The Simpsons. Bow down. It is one of the best shows of all creation. Okay, enough about me. Here's my quick review about Ratatouille. The movie was expertly executed. The animation is impeccable, voice cast is stellar, character design is appealing, and the music is sublime. Remy is a good character, but not a great one. I feel the same way about Linguini, Colette, Django, and Emile. Even the main villain, Ego, is typical. These central characters are not strong. The supporting cast, however, wow. All the other cooks in the kitchen have amazing backstories. I especially enjoyed Horse's story. I killed a man with this thumb. Awesome! And you can't help but love Gusteau. Of course, everyone loves an old bat with a rifle. My favorite, though, is Skinner. Although his story is typical, the way he reacts to everything is priceless. All the voice actors have done an astounding work on this film. Paris is the perfect setting for this story. Food, Paris, a match made in heaven. The country cottage where the movie begins is absolutely breathtaking. Michael Giacchino is a musical genius and one of my favorite composers. He does not disappoint in this film. One of the main things I look for in a movie is the story. Was this story worth telling? Why tell a story if no one is going to remember it? The story is amusing, but not memorable. I'm also big on replay value. This film has a weak one. These are the reasons that I give this film 3 out of 5 stars. Talk to you soon. Thomas Wagstaff.
So, Thomas, I loved hearing your thoughts on Ratatouille. I love Ratatouille, but you definitely pointed out some things that you disagreed with. And, you know, I liked what you said. Was this a story worth telling? Why tell a story if no one's going to remember it? And you personally think that it's amusing but not memorable. I like Ratatouille. I think it's just so unique. It's so interesting. I do agree with you a little bit on some of the characters being a bit weak and not so engaging, though.
I agree with him, too. It wasn't my favorite.
Of course, Chelsea does.
Hi there. I'm a little behind the curve here, but I just heard the Ratatouille episode, and I think you missed a few key things. The best thing about this movie is that it uses fine cuisine as an allegory for all things of art and creative expression. So with Remy's desire to cook, the book Anyone Can Cook, cooking is just a stand-in for poetry, painting, dancing, playing the guitar. Anton Ego's review at the end is about responsibility of all kinds and art critics. Second, what makes this movie stand out among Pixar movies and why it's so darn special is that it's structurally inverse of every other Pixar film. Whereas most movies, the main character is flawed and gradually changes throughout the film, learning lessons with each incident. In Ratatouille, Remy is constant. It's other people around him that have to learn to adapt and change to accept him. Linguini, Colette, Remy's father, Anton Ego, etc. Flick and Wall-E are kind of similar, but not as striking, I think. The main theme of all Pixar films is the concept of letting go, even before Frozen. Letting go of illusions, Woody, Buzz, McQueen. Letting go of the past, Woody, Jesse, Carl. Letting go of your ego, Woody, Sully, Ego, man, poor Woody. Woody, Sully, Ego, Eve, Merida, Eleanor. Letting go of your fear, Woody, the Pars, Nemo, Wall-E. And, the most moving, letting go of your loved ones, Woody, Carl, Marlin, Eleanor. For Remy and Ratatouille, he's learning not to let go, but hold on tight to his dreams and to keep chasing it. Up would have been a completely different and depressing movie if it weren't for Carl's lessons. Anyway, Ratatouille is definitely a 5-star film in my book. I enjoyed listening to your discussions. Enrico.
You know, that's really interesting that Enrico brings all of this stuff about letting go. And I think in a lot of ways, Pixar really does try and focus. Not Pixar, because Pixar in itself is not an entity, but I mean, it is just an entity, but the directors who all have worked with Pixar kind of do have, I don't know, they have always focused on, you know, the childlike side of us and kind of in one way going back to that, but at the same time moving forward and bringing it with you, but also letting go of what doesn't need to be there. So like for most of those ones that you brought up, it is just that, like, there's most of those is like kind of letting go of the things that are holding you, that aren't helping you progress, I guess. And I think that's something that Pixar's done really good with. And so thanks for bringing that to my attention.
All right. Our next emails are about our Great Mouse Detective episode.
Yeah, so I wrote down a bunch of notes because I wanted to remember everything, but
I'm really sorry.
We can make this as free form as y'all want. I understand that y'all didn't have time.
No, no worries. I have lots to say, so you'll kind of like take the lead, and then I'll add my two cents and my
opinions. And I love taking the lead.
That's what I thought.
I'll take whatever is left.
Yeah, Chelsea was like, I don't really have too many thoughts on this. I was like,
Chelsea, are you going to be our scavenger for this episode?
What does that mean?
Your scavenger, you just pick up the bits that we leave. Just kidding.
This is part of the rap series, kind of.
No, what is that? Okay, this is horrible, but back in the day, my parents was telling me that girls who are over, like, 25 or something and not married, people would just call them the gleaners. And a gleaner is somebody who just goes behind and picks up all the scraps. So I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Well, hey, they weren't really fair to women back then. I believe it.
Yeah.
I also like his little shot at American culture. You know, oh, they're corn dogs. You get a cheap sausage, you smother it in batter, and you deep fry it. It's American thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't just eat corn dogs. Hawaiian haystacks, on the other hand, he can take as many shots as that as he wants.
Ooh, I love Hawaiian haystacks.
Oh, come on, Chelsea.
This is why I don't belong on this episode.
I don't have a problem with Hawaiian haystacks.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Hawaiian haystacks are the worst.
For those who don't understand, explain the Hawaiian haystack, because I don't know if that's a universal reference.
Well, you know how Utah is kind of the land of people who think that they're cool, but they're really not. Hawaiian haystacks is one of those things. Yeah, just like Cafe Rio, BYU football. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
Just kidding. I love you, Utahns. But Hawaiian haystacks is basically you get rice and you just put stuff on top of it. And I guarantee you that's not how the Hawaiians do it.
And but yet, because they're always first in line.
And yet, every potluck in Utah and every okay, every lunch break at the BYU Telefund, where we call people and ask for donations. But anyway, yeah, every Hawaiian haystacks is like this horrible dish.
It's
so simple to make.
Let me spice it up for you. So it's a bed
get
of rice.
Fancy with spices.
It's a bed of rice topped off with a delectable chicken sauce with chunks of delectable moist chicken drizzled all over the rice, sprinkled with Chinese, what are those things called? Like they're a...
Oh, those little crunchy little wormy things?
It's like a crunchy noodle, a Chinese crunchy noodle. And with a little bit of chives and cheese, and you mix it all together, and it's just a paparazzi in your mouth. It's just so good.
A paparazzi?
And it's amazing. I don't know. I'm just thinking of words, and that's not applicable. But, you know, you think of paparazzi. They're just all over the place.
It's like a party in my mouth, and everybody's invited.
Oh, brother. All right. End of Hawaiian haystacks tangent / soapbox.
That happened.
And then I love this. Yeah, it totally did. Things are happening on this podcast.
Hey, Rotoscopers. So basically, Big Hero 6 was amazing. I agree with a lot of what you had to say in your review. The animation was gorgeous. Fred and Baymax were hilarious, and the Stan Lee cameo was definitely his best. I also agree that the villain was not the strongest. Hopefully, they do make a television show spin-off and will have better villains for the team to go up against. You guys commented how it was great that the cast wasn't an all-star lineup. I agree completely. I love that Disney and Pixar don't make a huge deal about who voices and about who does the voice acting for their characters. Honestly, when I see a commercial for an anime movie that really pushes the voice actors rather than the characters of the story, I assume that it won't be a very good movie. That's just me. Stay awesome, guys. And...
I'm Fred, so which one are you guys?
Morgan would definitely be Wasabi.
What?
Just putting it out there.
No!
Yes.
Honey Lemon.
Ooh, no. A meat freak, huh? I think both of you secretly want to be Honey Lemon and you're just volunteering each other to be Wasabi.
She's a super cruel, nerdy girl.
So I'm definitely not true. A go-go, so I don't know who I would be. I could be Hiro.
Hiro!
You could be Baymax. You're not so much about us, Chelsea.
Chelsea is a Baymax. She cares about others. Very sympathetic and empathetic.
And I'm so huggable.
She is super huggable.
I wouldn't know because I've never hugged Chelsea.
I've never met you, Mason.
I don't think I've ever hugged Morgan. I think I've just handshook her once.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You're a missionary. That's the hug.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, awkward discussion on physical contact aside. So I'm Fred. We've got, we're here with Honey Lemon and Baymax. So Chelsea, you have to talk like Baymax for the rest of the episode.
I am like Wasabi. like when he was driving and he was putting his blinker on.
Oh, even if you're being chased by
that's totally me. Like if the road is curving because it naturally curves and it's going that way, I put my blinker on. I let people know I'm curving.
Oh my
gosh. I'm curving. I'm turning.
I have a little bit of Wasabi in me too, because when we drive to Austin to Shanna's parents' house, there's always a turn that's not really a turn that you have to make with a blinker, but I always turn my blinker on anyway.
I turn my blinker on when I'm going into my house.
Really?
And my husband hates like repetitive noises, so I put my blinker on all the time. Basically, he's not a fan ever. He's like, we're in the left turn lane. Everyone's turning left. You don't. But I'm like, it's the law. These are fun discussions that we have.
It's the law.
He's Go-Go and Wasabi.
What does Go-Go say? She said, there's no law.
When, so she's like, there's no laws for lights. There's no stoplights in car chases.
The car chases. Yeah.
Or no red lights.
All right. but you can't hate Baymax. They created a lovable sidekick character that turned from a side character to a huge part of the main character, but they managed to they didn't polarize audiences with him. It wasn't like with Olaf, where like half the people think he's adorable, but half of audience thinks that they hate him and they just want to beat him on the head with a 2x4. But you could never take a 2x4 to Baymax.
No, he's too squishy.
He's 2x4 proof. I mean, it's just too squishy.
Yeah.
And,
it's going for
they
that
created
lovable,
such a
lovable feel.
Hey, I can do a great Stan Lee impression, and now I can add, now that he's an animated character, I can add it to I wear a backwards and front.
That's awesome.
Who
okay.
wants to be a superhero?
Hey, Rotoscopers, I just discovered your podcast and website earlier this week, and I was in love at first sight, or first listen, in the case of a podcast. It's great that there's a website operated by witty and intelligent people like you guys, where we can go to have conversations about animation. Anyway, I was listening to your Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown episode, and there were some questions about why there was a lengthy Snoopy and Red Baron section in the middle. Might I try and answer? The Snoopy and Red Baron strips were a huge smash hit when they first debuted in 1965. So much so, in fact, that the American soldiers in Vietnam took Snoopy in his pilot garb as their mascot. Snoopy is basically everywhere in Vietnam, on the sides of choppers, fighters, artillery, on patches, and engraved on lighters. Snoopy also became the unofficial mascot of NASA, and still is to this day. Anyway, I'm wondering if Bill Melendez and the animators included the Red Baron sequence in The Great Pumpkin as a salute to the soldiers in Vietnam. I might be wrong, but that's my theory. What do you guys think? Anyway, great podcast and website. Keep up the great work, guys. Sincerely, Johnny. Johnny! So that is an interesting theory. I think that's actually kind of an interesting way to think of why the Red Baron sequence was included in the Great Pumpkin, because we did talk in that episode, which that was a year ago. That was last year, technically.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that makes sense to me. Hey, Rotoscopers, I'm a new listener, having stumbled across your podcast through a friend on Facebook who shared your article about Hullabaloo a few months ago. I've been catching up on all the old casts ever since. I still have a ways to go, but I'm making good progress. As I listen, I hear things that I want to comment on, because they are old shows, I don't want to bog you down with all this old stuff. However, being December, I decided to listen to the Christmas shows, and I had to comment on one glaring omission from the Charlie Brown Christmas special discussion. The music! You guys barely mentioned it.
Chelsea, how could you let that pass? Vince Guaraldi's score has become iconic, and that soundtrack has been added to the Grammy Hall of Fame and is the 10th best-selling Christmas album. As Charlie Brown would say, good grief! Oh, and from the Rudolph episode, Mason the Snowman from Elf is Leon Redbone, a famous, iconic jazz musician. I guess you're not old enough to remember his Budweiser commercials from the 80s. You guys need an old Annie nerd on staff as a consultant. Okay, rant over. A little about me. I'm an old-school animation fan in my early 40s. I have two kids who have channeled my love for animation in their own ways. My daughter, 15, has become a huge anime fan and keeps me current on that front. And my son, 13, keeps me up to speed on all the cool shows on Cartoon Network. We especially enjoy the new Star Wars Rebels. My favorite movie is Disney's Peter Pan. Favorite classic cartoon is Star Blazers. You just can't beat a space battleship. I was also wondering when you were going to review Make My Music or Melody Time, which are great compilations of animated shorts highlighting Disney classic artists. I'm also curious about your thoughts about how Disney went back and changed the animation out of political correctness. That is, Pecos Bill. I enjoy your show. Keep them coming. Thanks, Rick H. from Warrenton, Virginia. Yeah, that was bad on our part. There's always something every episode that we forget about. In this case, it was music, which is such a shame because that
Chelsea,
score.
How could you let that pass? I'm sorry.
You were there.
I know. I was there. You know, and there's some of those songs are so iconic, especially now. I mean, the Charlie Brown Christmas song you hear every year. That is one of the staples that you hear on every Christmas station around. And it is just really great. So I'm thank you for bringing that to our attention about how remiss in our duties we were in mentioning the music from Charlie Brown Christmas. But now we have. So I hope that that makes up for a little bit of it at least.
Hey guys, I just listened to episode 78. It's funny how much unusual enthusiasm you have for a podcast for obscure Disney shorts. And it was great. Like Mason, I recall watching it when I was younger, but actually hadn't sat down and paid attention to it until more recently. The Headless Horseman and Ichabod are both burned into my mind of how haunting this was when I was younger, though the overall narrative was a forgotten one. I too agree, totally could have seen Mr. Toad drowning or Ichabod's hat and the smashed pumpkin at the ending, like you said. It probably would have just scared a lot of children, leaving it like that. By the way, it's been a cold season, so I enjoyed catching up and listening to your podcast while I've been sick. Also, here are some suggestions to follow along with your themes, though not necessarily in the Chinese zodiac. Robots, which would include Robots, WALL-E, Treasure Planet, Castle in the Sky, and Atlantis. Superhero, which would include Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, Batman Sub-Zero, Big Hero 6, and Megamind. Monsters and Aliens, which would be Monsters and Aliens, Titan A.E., Lilo and Stitch, Space Jam, Monsters Incorporated, Fish, Finding Nemo, Shark Tale, Ponyo, and SpongeBob movie. This might perk up Mason. I tried to get films from a variety of studios. Good luck in the continuation of your series theme podcasts, AJ.
Yeah, robots, definitely not in the Chinese zodiac, although it should be. That'd be so cool. I was born in the year of the robot.
You mean the future?
Yeah, yeah, you know.
I love for the superhero recommendations. It's Batman and these other movies. What? Basically, just do all the Batman movies.
Well, I love the old Batman cartoons from the 90s. I said it like 50 times on this show. And then Megamind. Did we do Megamind or not?
No.
We haven't done Megamind?
No.
And when we do Megamind, we have to go back and re-interview Schleifer.
Oh, that's right.
We have to re-interview Schleifer because that man's awesome. I just need an excuse to interview him.
He was great, and he deserves another interview.
He does. Thanks, AJ. That was awesome.
Morgan, is your mic muted or something?
No, Chelsea stole my line.
No, well, there's another line you can get.
But I spent the time to write this quote. You know how hard it is to write quotes?
Do you want to do it? I'll let you take it. Go for
no,
it.
No, I'm just saying. That was my quote. Thank you. We may move on. I don't want to say it.
I know this.
I've given you formal permission now.
Don't worry,
Chelsea. Otherwise, you could just talk about him looking weird in a hat.
Morgan, thank you for expressing your disappointment. We understand your disappointment. And that's how you respond. Anyway. But here's a nice quote right here,
Morgan.
You can
tell he has a wife.
No, I got that from an I watched the I watched an episode of Modern Family where it explains how to respond. I won't say deal with, but how to respond.
Well, honestly, you know, this is where my like capitalism comes out. I was like, I would be totally fine with a Chef Gusteau burrito. Like, I would buy that.
Well, you know,
totally buy that.
Antonego
stole my line.
Oh,
really?
Antonego takes a shot at.
I said, consumerism off a dead person's legacy.
We never said that. You can say that right now, and it'll sound like we never said that.
Consumerism based off a dead person's legacy.
It breaks the canon of Mickey's ears.
Ah, would you like to explain the Mickey ear canon? Because you're the animator, you know.
No, I'm not going to make this mistake twice. You say it because you wrote down the line.
No, okay, when I give you permission to steal my line, that means I think you can do it better than me. If you just steal my line.
So this is basically calling me a ladrona. This is what she is. She's just saying, you know what?
I'm just, or in Italian, a ladro. So, but anyway, what were we talking about? Goofy, right?
Goofy. Where's Chelsea?
I don't know.
I'm here. Oh. I have nothing written, so therefore I shall not speak.
Chelsea, that's not what I meant.
I'm kidding. I really don't have much to say.
I'm sorry for getting mad at you. I should not have. That was poor taste, and I apologize. And let's just kiss and make up.
Okay. We're better now.
Yeah. Everybody just go to your corners.
I'm sorry, Chelsea.
I'm used to it. Whatever. No, I'm kidding.
It's okay.
Opinionated.
You can have opposing viewpoints.
Was it a dream, or did he really see the ghost of Marley? And did he really see the ghost of Christmas past, future, present, blah, blah, blah? Or was it just a dream?
Wait, you stole my line. I was going to say that. Wait, I never wrote that. What is going on here?
Did you color that green?
No, I never did. I never touched that.
That was me. I typed it, but it must have been on a green thing. You know how sometimes you type it, it takes someone else's color.
I have been maligned and finagled.
Wait, that was my line.
Okay, so.
Our bloopers just needs to be of all of us getting mad at it for stealing each other's lines. And actually, no, we don't want them to know our drama.
This is what happens behind the mic.
Behind the scenes. The tight-knit group of best friends, I don't think so.
Yes, 2015 episode, that'd be great. Hey guys, Catherine from Virginia here. My email game with you guys has never been strong. I did send y'all a super passionate voicemail about Balto, though. But cheers to the future. I thought I'd send in my thoughts about some of your podcast episodes. The Great Mouse Detective. Every time I'm asked what my favorite Disney movie is, I end up naming 10-plus movies, and The Great Mouse Detective is always one of them. I just love the character's music and the Sherlock Holmes parallels. I think that the Clock Tower fight scene is one of the most epic scenes in any Disney film. Anastasia, fun story. When I was in high school, I took catering, and one day we had a guest who was going to demonstrate how to make beef stroganoff. Before she got cooking, we played a trivia game, and one of the questions was, what country does beef stroganoff come from? Most of the groups were saying Germany or Poland. My group was going to say Germany as well, until one of my friends said the word stroganoff. It reminded me of the way that of Anastasia's line, I never cared for stroganoff. I convinced them to change the answer to Russia, and it was the only question we got right for the whole game. My proudest moment. Anastasia is definitely one of my favorite animated movies. I love the animation, and the colors are simply gorgeous. I also think that every song in the film is superb. Once Upon a Dream always gives me goosebumps, especially during the part where the people dance out of their portraits. My favorite song from the movie is actually the end credits, at the beginning. I have fond memories of rewinding the VHS tape over and over just to listen to that song, Hercules. This movie tends to get the shaft, but is one of my favorites. Greek mythology is something that I've always loved, and though Hercules is not accurate to the myths, Hercules is his Roman name, for one thing. I still find the movie enjoyable. I love the song Go the Distance so much that I used it in one of my lesson plans to teach a theme. I think that if you're going to rank movies solely based on their quotability, it goes Hercules, Robin Hood, and Emperor's New Groove would definitely be at the top three. Anyway, I don't want to ramble too much. Can't wait to hear your next episode. Take care, Catherine. awesome. Thank you, Catherine, for sending in that email. I love that you, and I liked what you said. You know, when people ask what your favorite Disney movie is, you end up naming about 10 plus movies. And I'm the exact same way. I'm like, well, I like this one and this one and this one and this one and that one too. And I love that you included Great Mouse Detective in that one. And Hercules. It's just so good. So quotable.
Hey all, I really enjoyed your take on The Great Mouse Detective, but you didn't mention one of my favorite pieces of trivia from the film. Did you know that Basil is named after Basil Rathbone, the actor that played Sherlock Holmes in 16 films and over 200 radio plays, according to IMDb? Most of the movies are still entertaining. Also, silhouettes of Sherlock and Watson that you see in the film appear to be based on Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce's Sherlock and Watson pairing. Hope you find this as interesting as I do. Thanks for allowing me to listen to your analysis. Jerry M.
Huh. I did not know that little bit of trivia.
Now you do.
Yeah, now I do. Thanks.
Knowing's half the battle.
Glenn Keane.
Yay!
Hello. Hello. It's great to be here, Chelsea Mason. Thank you for having me. I loved your podcast on... Radigan.
On Great Mouse Detective. Hey, thank you so much for listening. You never know who's listening to our podcast.
Well, you mentioned, does he listen? Nah, he doesn't. So that's why I sent, did you get my email I sent to you guys?
We did.
Yeah, Morgan sent it to us. I only have one question, Glenn. Did you like my Radigan Vincent Price impression? Was it okay or not?
I thought it was the only one that kind of just found Vincent Price's voice so mesmerizing that you just can't stop repeating his little phrases. And he was just so wonderful. It was like listening to his expressions and the tone of his voice was like fine wine or something.
Oh, absolutely.
Really wonderful. Yeah, I loved it. It was fun listening to him again through you.
Oh, shucks. Well, thank you so much for your kind words. That means a lot to us. And I should always be careful for what I wish for on the podcast. Yeah, we usually have a lot of fun on these interviews. I don't know if you listen to one of our interview podcasts, but these usually are really fun. So,
well, I figure everything you do sounds like it's going to be fun.
Shucks.
I was so impressed. It was so wonderful to hear, somebody who gets such joy out of the characters and the animation. I mean, because when we're working on it, we put every part of our being into those films. Whether they do well or whether they do poorly, it doesn't matter. You still live in the skin of the characters that you create, and they're part of you out there. And to hear your genuine enthusiasm and just thoughts about the film was absolutely just a gift for me. And I just want to thank you for what you both do on the Rotoscopers.
All right. Have a good one, Glenn. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jenny.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, you guys, for making the time to meet with us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You guys too.
Great.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye. This is their Facebook page, and all of these people are like excited to. This is all in response to your podcast with them.
Oh man, they really wanted more. It's too bad I couldn't have talked more with them, but that's me.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it is. It is really bad. Make sure you guys go ahead and hang up on us so that me and Chelsea can do the wrap up.
Yeah, I would have loved to.
Yeah, but we want to have you on soon, sometime later. How about that?
Great, I'd love to do that. We just started.
Excellent. Well, go ahead and hang up from our call, and me and Chelsea will do the wrap up.
Okay. Bye, you guys.
Bye,
see you guys.
And our very last email for the year is the best one that I woke up to. And I'm just going to go right into it. Dear Rotoscopers, I listened to your podcast on The Great Mouse Detective, and I was transported back to the days of creating Radigan. Your genuine enthusiasm for animation and your insights into the characters is almost as entertaining as the movie itself. If you ever want to discover the true comic genius of Vincent Price, then check out the film Champagne for Caesar. This was the inspiration for Radigan. It was one of my greatest thrills at Disney to meet such a humble and generous man. He made me feel like the star. Ron Clemens and John Musker came into their own on that film, and the rest is history. Keep doing what you do. We are listening. Warm regards, Glenn Keane. Ah, this is so exciting. I can't even explain to you how shocked and excited I was when I read this email from Glenn Keane. I couldn't believe it. So complimentary, so kind, so nice. Really lifted my spirits and made me excited that what we're doing on the podcast is being recognized as good. I don't know. That is something more. I know we talk, we're just fans. We're just talking about what we love, but seeing people who actually create the animation that we love, listen to the show and comment too, it is probably one of the most exciting things.
And can I just say, after that interview, he went in and on the Facebook post where we talked about how he had all of these people that had over 52 comments right before we interviewed him. And he went in and individually responded to each and every one of them in some way, shape, or form. You know, and some of them were very easy. Some of them were kind of a little bit longer, and some of them were super in depth. And it just, it really goes to show you what a great man Glenn Keane really is. I have never been in an industry where I've met quite as many just straight up kind people. And that's one of the main reasons why I love animation so much, is because the people who are making the films, the people who are really the stars behind them, are the ones that are just, they're really there to, they understand that in order to become great and in order to become, to share your knowledge, you have to be a nice person. And that's something that I really appreciated about this interview, specifically with Glenn Keane.
Hello, Rotoscopers. Yuri here. The year is coming to an end, and I just had to send you guys a voicemail for the Best of 2014 episode. You guys did Lion King. You can't go wrong with Lion King. It's always good to have someone remember to those with a dirty mind that it adds FX. Also, it's really worth mentioning that I am 100% with Mason on the Tarzan episode, you know, with all the Disney theories. The most of them doesn't even make sense. It has been a great year, and you guys got to interview Glenn Keane. That's amazing. So in 2014, I hope all the best to you, and that you get to interview John Lasseter, Hayao Miyazaki, get a time machine, and interview Walt Disney. Why not? You know, just simple things. Bye, guys.
All right, everybody. Those are our emails for the year. We have wrapped up and finished every single email. And as someone who believes in inbox zero, which is filtering out your inbox, making everything is assigned a place or responded to, this makes me really happy because all of these are responded to and I can clear them out and say, we did that. And I'm just really excited that we got to read all of these and talk about all these and include them on our Best of 2014. Because I think one of the best things about just the Animation Addicts podcast in general or 2015 are the fans and the listeners and our fellow rotoscopers, just like you and me, who listen to the show and contribute to the show. I just love hearing from you guys. I love your thoughts. And I love just that we're so worldwide too. It was just so exciting to, you know, as we were reading all these different emails from different countries, just how universal animation is. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
I can't wait to hear your voicemails next year. But do, if you have an email, please just, you can still send it. It just won't get on the show. I handle the emails, so I will respond personally. But if you do have something that you want to get on the show, just remember voicemail is the new way. So, or if you have something you want to say, you can always comment in the comments of every single episode and, you know, give your mini reviews there. That's a great way to be involved and share your opinion. And like, don't be afraid to send in a voicemail. No one cares what you sound like. Doesn't have to be good quality. Like, we'll make it work. We just love hearing from you guys. So anyways, thank you. We love you. You're the best.
Until next time.
We are the Rotoscopers.
Mm-hmm.
What are you, an 80s pop star? Ugh, someone uses a Mac.
Does the Best of 2014 show have bloopers?
Oh, even the bloopers have now. Bloopers.